This week on Retronauts, be sure to delete this podcast within 24 hours of downloading. Hey everybody, it's me, Bob Mackey, your host for episode 8 of Retronauts. Today's topic is the fan translation scene and the top fan translations you should play. I'm your host, obviously, Bob Mackey. Let's see who else is here today.
Who is here? Ray's here.
Hi, Ray.
Ray Barnholtz.
We all know you. You're a Retronaut.
Yeah.
But we have two special guests because Jeremy is missing. But we know where he is. Don't worry. Who is right there?
Hi, I'm Chris Antista.
Cool.
You may know me from formerly of the press, PC Gamer, Games Radar. I currently work for Capcom on the community end, and I host a couple shows on the Laser Time Network, including Laser Time, the pop culture show, our comic show, Cape Crisis, and I guess I'll stop there because I sound really pluggy.
But we are fans, and I was on Laser Time a few times, and I hope to be back. I want to do that Mystery Science Theater episode.
Yeah, we got to figure out what to do with that. Yeah.
I do, too, right now. Putting my hat in.
All right.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Right. So,
do you know, you guys know we record across the street from one another. I'm just finding this out now. We are one block away, and I have to run over there in a second and talk about GTA.
Nice. So who else do we have?
This is Brett Elston, also former press. Now I run the community side of things over at Capcom, and also help out Chris with Laser Time, Cape Crisis, and then have my own show, VG Empire, which is a game music-focused podcast where we just play classic soundtracks. Each one has a theme to it, and then we talk about the music and how great it is, and then usually try to point people to legitimate ways they can buy that music or support the composer in some way. Because a lot of these Japanese composers are doing a lot of cool stuff now that you can... Like, if you can't, even if you buy a used copy of a game they made, they scored 20 years ago.
Yeah.
No, Project Phoenix or Yuzo Koshiro shows up at MAGFest.
Brett has always been really good about, like, trying his best to track down the composers of this music, even when they're not credited.
Oh, it's
so
hilarious.
So, Elston, I was looking the other day at, dude, he dug up the music from this game called Golf Power. Who knew? It's amazing.
It's incredible. Amazing.
And you wrote about it on Games Radar for Games Music of the Day, and you're like, composer, like, it could be this guy, it could be this guy, I really can't tell. The latest comment is from 2 years ago, and it's the composer of the song.
Is it really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Whoa.
He says, it was me. My name's thing. I totally forgot I did that.
Whoa.
And that's, I don't know. That's why, I don't know. I just thought
I had,
that would make it worth a while for you.
The Pickford brothers of Plock actually reach out to me at one point to be like, hey, thanks for acknowledging Plock.
They have Plock Google Alert, probably, I would guess. So, I mean, have you met Yuki-chan's papa yet?
No, but...
Okay.
You
met Yuki-chan. She's like the receptionist.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, she's just sitting down there. But please throw your game trivia at me. That's all I have.
That's what we're good at. So usually we do news and retro releases, but this podcast is going to be launching about 5 weeks after we record it. So anything we say is going to be completely irrelevant. But Chris had a few things he wanted to talk to us about. So
obligated
go for it.
To plug DuckTales, not just because I work at Capcom. If anybody remembers my avatar from Games Radar, the Scrooge McDuck, 8-bit Scrooge McDuck was there. It was kind of my favorite game growing up, as were a lot of Capcom games. But this is the one that everybody said would never happen, and it did.
Yeah,
and I know there people complained about the cutscenes. I'm like, the last time these characters will ever get together in anything that resembles hand-drawn animation, like that's really special.
The summer of 2012 was like DuckTales and Earthbound becoming available again in some format.
Exactly.
It was just like things that would never happen have finally happened.
And so for people like I don't know, like I really hope you get your impossible game someday.
Yeah,
I really do.
Dreams can come true, except if they're related.
It's been a great feeling.
Yes, Dream and Friends.
Right. Oh, yeah, the two greatest things.
Yeah. Hey,
I got it.
I'm in a place where people get that.
Yes.
Yes. But I actually, it just came out. It came on 360 from where we're recording and with free avatar items to compensate people for the delay. But whatever, I actually wanted to plug Volgar the Viking, which is like so much like Ghosts and Goblins. Brett and people in our office were playing Ghosts and Goblins the other day and with a smile on their face. I was capturing video of Ghosts and Goblins and pulling my hair out. Since I'm not playing to enjoy, I am thoroughly annoyed. And then I got three people in the office to come volunteer, and they're sitting there smiling, losing, dying, watching Arthur crumple to bones, and enjoying themselves, and that's the feeling I got from Volgar the Viking.
Cool. And it's on Steam, you said, for $10?
$10.
Awesome. I will check that out. Just a few DuckTales questions, if I may.
Ooh.
Just maybe one.
No, go for it.
I mean, you're not here to represent Capcom, obviously, but did you talk to or meet Alan Young at all?
No, I didn't get to meet him. I did get to write the dialogue for Launchpad McQuack.
Right. Was it running at the E3 booth? Was that you? Or,
yes.
Okay,
was,
great.
That was all me.
I heard that.
But in all the things you'll see on YouTube with Launchpad telling you about your itinerary for the levels, that's
oh. Oh, cool.
I got to write that, and I got there was a conference call. My stupid parents were visiting, so I couldn't go to the studio for the Terrence McGovern voice
session. Oh, man,
voice
he's
session.
The best. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah, that's really crazy. I didn't, our producer, like, he grew up with listening to him on morning radio. Like, he was a radio DJ. So if I'm just trying to imagine as a little kid, Launchpad. That was Sister Christian, Mr. McD.
Wow. I just thought it would have been amazing. I mean, you mentioned Dream and Friends and DuckTales ending text. It would have been great if all of the dialogue was well written, but you made Alan Young say that just for the ending out of nowhere. She's
Dream
like,
and Friends? I wish.
Just say it, Alan.
We did submit him dialogue. Like, I went absolutely nuts. They're like, okay, we're doing... This was kind of a fluke. No one really... The game was not planned to include these voice actors.
Oh, wow.
Disney's
okay.
Like, would you like to? And like... So everybody in the project, like, we're allowed to use a voice actor? It's like, yeah, we can facilitate that. That'll be cool. And so, like, write down everything you want Alan Young to say, Scrooge McDuck.
Wow.
And we did. And so it's like Hadouk and Jill Sandwich, like, going Capcom nuts. And then we get a note back from Disney, like, ooh, sorry, the only real rule we have about these characters is that they can't break the fourth wall because they don't know they're in a video game. And they don't know they're in a game, therefore they cannot reference other games. I'm like, that... I had no idea. That's why you never see Mickey like, go see my movie, kids. He never says that. He doesn't know he's so not a cartoon.
Does that mean the characters can't be like, hit the action button or hit the... Okay, wow.
Yeah, so when I had to write Launchpad's dialogue, that's why I couldn't... You were like, just write, tell the player. Like, Launchpad doesn't know he's in a game. He can't talk to the player. He has to tell Scrooge
what
to do.
But what if he hit his head and now he thinks he's in a game?
Oh, huh? I'm in a game now, Mr. Mickey.
This is a canon loophole we can do it.
Yeah.
DuckTales 3.
So yes, our main topic today is the fan translation scene, and this episode is brought to you by Aaron Davies from New Zealand, and he says, I've always found the alternate non-game specific episodes the most intriguing. A topic suggested to me was that of fan translations, and by the way, me, Bob Mackey, suggested that to Aaron because he asked me. he goes on to say, it's really interesting to see a foreign game get this much fan attention, especially knowing the monumental task involved in both translating the text and then reverse engineering it back into a game. Thanks for covering this topic. No problem, Aaron. This is actually something I wanted to do at 1UP, but didn't get the chance to for reasons beyond my control, and now we're here doing it. I'm so excited, so let's get started. So basically, to talk about this topic, we first have to talk about the rise of emulation, and that's something that happened from the mid to late 90s. There were emulators before, but pretty much the first emulator everyone used was Nesticle.
Nesticle.
An NES emulator with the most, like...
Harry Balsack.
Yeah. Okay.
Icon.
The Harry Balsack icon and the blood-dripping severed hand as your pointer. I'm pretty sure even, like...
It had a really cool Rat Fink tattoo, I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure even, like, the taskbar was dripping blood at the top of the screen.
Everything was either dripping blood or maybe a hologram.
I actually went looking for it the other year just to... I don't know. I could not find it, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was stopped... they stopped updating in, like, the early 2000s, even if they did...
The programmer that he like went on to like go to EA and like program for like Madden games and stuff, and
really?
So yeah, he moved up.
And
hiding nut sacks in those games, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was assuming you'd say Leisure Suit Larry or something
from the maker of Genesis on the back of the box. Genesis, by the way, I don't think I enunciated properly.
Right. You don't want a Genesis on your Nesticle. That's
oh God, you need a biopsy.
Yeah, all right. I'm trying to think of something for TurboGrafx.
Yeah, like a Jaguar biopsy.
I think the TurboGrafx emulator didn't have a filthy name because the Nesticle guy didn't release it. I'm sure it would have been awful. But so yes, basically, I'll explain my story. You guys can talk about your story. I discovered emulation through a Mystery Science Theater website because all things in my life are somehow connected to Mystery Science Theater. Everything I discover, I don't know why. I'm just obsessed.
To go on to that show, but that show is a barrage of pop culture.
Right.
So it will all, for me and people like you and I, it'll always be the center of where my knowledge comes from. I don't know how I know who Emmett Kelly, a classic clown, is. Right. Mystery Science told me, probably.
Right. Yeah, or like Red Buttons.
Red Buttons, like that. I didn't experience any of that. I don't know. Thank you, Mystery Science.
So they educated us in things that we never needed to know about and still don't, but we know them and we're suffering for it. So... yeah, so basically in high school, I discovered emulators, and it was a magical time because every game I couldn't get, either because I didn't get it for Christmas or I couldn't afford it. It wasn't just about stealing, just so you guys know. It was mainly things that were not available just because of the nature of game distribution at the time. Either my Toys R Us didn't get it, my video store didn't get it, or it was from another country and the United States didn't get it.
It was more about there was no other option.
Exactly,
You're not costing sales of anything because it's not for sale.
Right, it's like I could throw my lawn mowing money in the air and no one would catch it, you know, if I wanted Dragon Quest III.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically the biggest or the first big translation that happened, I should preface this by saying because of emulation, people eventually started poking around in the game files, the game dumps, and like, oh, hey, this is where the dialogue is stored and we can change things around. And obviously it's a lot more complicated than that because, you know,
we can hack the ROM to take away Mario's pants.
Oh, or make him a KKK member or something like that.
I actually remember the first ROM hack I played was Somari.
Oh, yeah, the Sonic Mario
was that a ROM hack or is that a legitimate pirate release?
Oh,
Ray?
I guess it was more of a pirated release because it wasn't like a hack of an existing game, I guess. But it was this weird Mario that ran like Sonic. Is super bizarre.
Yeah, I played it.
Some pirate's fantasy.
Yeah. Yes.
some Taiwanese guys.
And like, it's weird how, like...
in a pre-Wikia DeviantArt world, this guy made it happen.
My favorite, just due to its level of immaturity, is the RoboCop... Pink RoboCop game, HomoCop.
Oh,
okay.
Because the directive is kiss men. F men. Three love men.
We should say that most of the translation scene, they were mostly teenagers,
they
right?
Were 13,
they were.
13-year-olds who thought everything was funny.
Yeah, and they oddly had a weird kind of South Park topicality to them because within hours of Mike Tyson biting Evander Holyfield's ear off, there was a Mike Tyson bite-off ROM hack that you could download and apply to your
fucking
punch
Zofar's out. Domain made a news post about that.
Yeah, I think that's where I found it.
Yeah, about that. Not the hack.
Subscribe to our newsletter.
I've never heard anybody say Zofar's Domain out loud.
So yes, but along with your super KKK brothers and HomoCop, you would also have people looking at dialogue and saying, hey, we can change this around. I mean, like I said, it's not that simple. There's compression. There's things you have to work around. There's programming tricks. But these smart programmers eventually figure out how to change dialogue from Japanese to English. And the first most monumental release in this early period was Final Fantasy V, which is a Final Fantasy that we didn't get until 2 years later when Square released it themselves on the PlayStation. But still, the entire mission statement behind these sort of scenes were like, we're going to democratize content. Mm-hmm. In a way, it is stealing, but if these companies don't want to offer a way to sell it to you, we're going to do it ourselves. And we're going to give it to you in English so you can appreciate it as well. I mean, it's all driven by fandom. I think these people rarely ask for money if they ever do.
I wanted to personally just thank... Now that I'm closer to localization and all those hurdles that are involved in localization ever, like the people who do... It's such a stupid reason to be denied content. But it is prohibitive.
It is expensive, yeah.
It's one of those dumb business reasons where you're like, we could explain it to you in detail, but it won't satisfy anything.
Yes, and you'll still
be like, oh, so everything's actually way harder and more expensive than it sounds.
It's a dumb reason to be denied beautiful things, and that these people take... If you're listening, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be kissing everyone's ass repeatedly who's been doing all this work. But I did also want to point out that the translation scene sort of coincided with the rise of anime fan subs because this was the era, I guess, mid-90s to maybe mid-2000s where Japan was this magical wonderland where everything happened first and they got everything first and we would just miss out on so many things. Yeah. And this is the era where games would take months or years to hit our shores after hitting Japan, but now it's just like the PS4 is...
There was almost like no simultaneous development. It was like, we'll finish it and then we will start localizing it if the American counterpart wants to bother.
Exactly, yeah. And there are issues like that, obviously. But... That era is not around anymore, but at this time, it was just like, Japan is holding out on us. Why can't I play this game? Why can't I play this sequel? And these are the people that were like, we're going to let you do this. We're going to work hard. We're going to do it for free. And we're going to, just for the love of these games and also for anime. Mm-hmm. And like I said on an earlier recording that was botched, as this keeps happening throughout the episode, knock on wood, I basically took it the initiative myself to figure out how Dragon Ball Z continued, where the TV episodes cut off in the middle of that damn Frieza fight.
Yep.
Brett, why don't you talk about like your experience with Dragon Ball Z just briefly?
Oh, I remember like, well, like I remember every.
This is Dragon Ball Z Confessions. So.
Well, sure. Well, look, I think
he brought his Piccolo hat.
I think we can all agree it's a pretty great show. but no, it was like every Saturday for like what felt, you know, in teenage years, a million years. Mm-hmm. Every time watching a complete run through of that show, gets to the same episode. Okay, this time, next Saturday, it will be the next episode. They will next actually time. Fight, and it would be back to episode one. And then I'm just like, I've now seen the whole Namek and half of Frieza like a dozen times. And then all of a sudden, one day in 2000, Cartoon Network, I just turned it on, and Trunks is flying around. And I'm like, I had like an audible like gasp.
They were knee deep into the Android saga.
Yeah, and I'm like, what the hell? Like a genuine, what? Just like in a room full of people, and they're like, what is this? I'm like, it's Trunks. How? And just knowing that they finally, like, years later, and then that triggered a memory of buying EGM in the early mid-90s and seeing, like, wait, this is that show that I would see ads for toys in, like, the last 5 or 10 pages of EGM when it was a phone book size. And it, if I look back, it's like, wait, there were Super Nintendo games, and it's like, that really showed you how old it was and how long it had been around. And that was the first, like, time I'd really realized, wow, we've been missing out. And my other one was Godzilla subs, which was the only good thing that came out of the 98. Horrible, awful movie was they finally brought over a lot of, or was able to get bootlegs of those movies. Destroy Us, Space Godzilla, Biollante, I think.
If I may, I just stumbled upon this notion the other day. It was about having a discussion about anime brought on by Attack on Titan, which everybody should watch. It's
really
fun.
Good.
And I started watching that because of Laser Time, actually.
Good.
And I'm 4 episodes in and I love it.
It's
so thanks
fun.
For the recommendation.
So
yeah,
so
and
intense.
And I gave up on anime like 5 years ago, so it's nice to have some.
I have the same thing. But I remember the reason when I discovered there was a thing called anime, I'm like, oh, all this comes out of Japan. This style I like from Battle of the Planets and like the few shows that Speed Racer, the shows I get to see that represent that. I didn't realize that like that was because of video games.
Yeah.
Video games had planted the seed of me loving anime and America was not delivering on it.
No.
That never occurred to me because that was the only reason like I found that style so appealing. It was constantly in games and here are them in full motion. Gotta see.
I was the same way. I remember seeing the word anime in a magazine in like 1993 and they were praising the anime style graphics of Super Street Fighter 2. And I was asking my stepdad, we were in like the car at the time, I was like, what's anime? What does that mean? And I think I called it anime for like 5 years because there was no one was saying it out loud except for teenagers.
And your dad's a hardcore weeboo, so he just slapped you across the face.
He opened up his Dr. Slump collection and we had some bonding moments.
I remember asking my parents for years, like watching Thundercats and Ninja Turtles, I'm like, what's a mutant? And I would just fumble the word, what's a mutant? What's a mutant? And they'd be like, oh, it's someone who can't talk. Mute. They just heard mute over and over. And I'm like, no, mutant. And like, oh, it's just, you know, whatever. You don't need to know you're 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I only will say the DBZ conversation. I was total hipster. I watched the entire series on the internet. My one person who I knew had DSL, we all moved our computers into his garage, and we all watched DBZ in there. Wow. By the time it hit Cartoon Network, I'd seen it all and was hipster and above it.
I like the original Dragon Ball better. It has fighting and poop jokes.
It's not just GT's not doing it for me. Oh, you're watching Z. That's pretty good.
I was suckered into GT big time. I got halfway through, and it's like, wait a minute. This isn't very good.
I think we just all really incriminated ourselves. So
yeah, well,
I want to move
thank
away.
Thank God, I cannot relate.
It was a different time.
What
it
were you doing instead, Ray?
Playing video games.
All right, I'll allow it.
You know, ROMs.
Who's the hipster?
Yeah.
All right. But I guess a quick relevant point for the ROMs was that was how really I started expanding my game music knowledge and collection. Mm-hmm. It was like we'd made a lot of off-air recordings of like Sonic soundtrack, and then would hook up our Super NES or Genesis to a speaker system and stereo and do like at least quotes direct feed still to a cassette. But then MP3s and NSFs and emulators made it way easier to not just search for which games had good music, but then rip it. And then that would influence my decision of, well, now that I have money, I'm going to go around to all these rental stores and pawn shops and just acquire all the games I think, and my collection will be games with great music. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I've been working on for the last like 12 years.
And with those files, you can also like turn off different instruments and like this is the bass line of Mario 3, or this is the drum of Castlevania 2.
Early on, a friend of mine made like a Ninja Gaiden compilation CD of 1, 2, and 3, and it ends with a secret track back when you could do that on CDs of add a bunch of dead air for
is
like
that
2 minutes.
Is that how you did it too?
Well, you just add dead air for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, then I used Nirvana's Nevermind because they had, I'm just going to say the name. Isn't it Moist Vagina? Like the song that's the hidden track on Nevermind?
I don't know.
Nevermind. All I can remember I've is actually the never Green
listened.
Day
you
one.
Listen to the, you listen, oh, you listen to the album.
Like All by Myself or whatever.
After FOD.
Yes, but it's like that. And I had the only way I could record was record off my NES was listen to the last Nirvana song and let the 20 minutes play of Secret Silence before the secret song. And within that 20 minutes, I could shove an RCA adapter into my stereo and record off my NES. And then, of course, a song would start blaring and ruin several tracks. But Nirvana's Nevermind is how we did it.
But we recorded this Tower of Laja from Ninja Gaiden 2. I think that's how you pronounce it. Made a remix basically by turning off and on all the channels. And it was just like this freeform, that sounds pretty cool.
Yes.
But then when it was done, it was like, dude, this is so cool. And it was like, for me, the first video game remix that I ever really heard.
So yeah, before I get started, I guess we pretty much talked about, you know, our lives in the mid to late 90s, how we felt about Japanese content and how we, you know, figured out how to get it for ourselves. What is your history with fan translations? Have you played fan translations? I mean, were you part of that scene? Have you ever looked into it? I mean, I know,
to be totally honest, I didn't know I was being part of it. I didn't realize that these I'm playing a game that has never been officially translated. I just didn't know. Because of emulation. I think I just downloaded those giant packs and I just try something out.
Yeah, and a lot of the time the ROMs will be patched already, so you don't know where the translation comes from or that it wasn't available before. So
I looked at a list and I had no idea that game was never officially translated because it wasn't a huge part of my life and I didn't like it that much. But I didn't know. It was just this big cluster of ROMs that I tried to get through alphabetically.
Right. The only two I ever really messed with at all were Final Fantasy 2 and 3.
Okay.
Just because I loved, I tolerated 1 when it came out, and then I absolutely adored 2 and 3 when they came to the US. So then I was like, well, what's the real 2 and 3 like? And with not really any guidance and no one I knew had played them ever, I was like, maybe get an hour or two into them. And I'm like, I love that someone translated this, but I am not any. I don't know if I have the patience to go through 2 Final Fantasy games back to back.
And it's also that I didn't really. I refused to play RPGs practically because I had a really idiotic misunderstanding of what was happening, and I didn't play it. It took me a long time to play them, and I think those are the games that have the most astounding or most notable fan translations.
Right, just because of the amount of work that has to go into them.
I can play Yoshi's Cookie 2 all day long, and I don't need to know what the screen is saying.
Yes, and then there's a game in this list that we're going to go through that was definitely one that was on my radar. But I guess the closest thing now is working at Capcom, we've become gigantic Monster Hunter geeks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I am now, too, just because of 3 Ultimate.
I got a 4 3DS.
No, we all imported 4 and 3DSs, and I do not read or speak Japanese, but I'm going to try to cram the hell out of it in 1 week so that I can at least read, the kana and the kanji, learning just the kanji that are, like
attack, defense.
Yeah, just trying
like
to just so I know differentiators because the menus and stuff are very visual. So
and
I'm
if
hoping
you remember the icons. Hopefully, we
yeah,
can
the
find
icons will be similar.
Ray, how about you with fan translations?
Well, you know, I was a big participant in the MU scene.
Ooh, nice.
And you know, I was definitely tracking the news when FF5 came out at first. But you know, everything else with the RPGs was so glacial, and those were the only ones worth caring about. Like, I wanted Dragon Quest 3 or Dragon Quest 1 and 2 to be finished already, and then Secret of Mana 2. You know, Sega Densetsu 3 took forever.
Yep.
And by then, it was just like, well, I'll just go ahead and go through this list of Japanese ROMs that I have, they're all labeled like JAP 36, JAP 32, and it's like try them out and build my knowledge through that, and that's basically what happened. So
check out a file in there called Naughty Dogs. It's really good.
Oh god. Well, yeah. I mean, I shouldn't have to say this, but it's really important to me, and like as someone with a lot of time on his hands as a teenager, as we probably all of us had, I spent all of my time just going into these games, and I felt like I was I was achieving something because it's like, this game was not available. I can play it now. And yeah. I like have knowledge that other people don't have about this game. Like I was trying to become an expert in like this world of Japanese games that was just sort of obsessed over by this small group of people, the fan translation scene. Mm-hmm. And I want to say, I mean, the scene had its most productive years as emulation slowly perfected itself. Like the most exciting years of emulation were the late 90s where it's like, oh my God, we emulated the SNES sound chip perfectly.
Yeah.
Here, download this sound clip of it playing Chrono Trigger's intro and then we'll have the emulator ready next week or something crazy like that.
Yes.
It was nuts just to see, oh, we finally got this. We finally did this. And now computing is just so insane that like, I have a GameCube emulator on my computer, and,
whoa,
and it's
really?
Like 60 frames per second Wind Waker.
That exists.
And yeah, I mean,
it's the Dolphin one, right?
Dolphin, yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
I knew Dolphin. I just haven't tried. I haven't tried it yet.
It's really amazing. I mean, instead, like I've pretty much put all my consoles away and just emulate everything now with my PC, just because emulation has gotten that far. Like PS2 yeah. emulation is so good. GameCube emulation is so good. But
I can't condone that, Bob. But,
I'm sorry.
Show me how.
No, if you have a physical version of all those games, you
I do,
are legally
I do.
In the clear.
Yes, yeah, I don't know that legally protects anybody.
No,
definitely
you,
not. Some that's kind of that's kind of the thing. Like if you ask him if he's a cop, he's got to tell you.
Yeah,
that's.
So, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure you could dig into some rules and find. I see the stack of games behind you guys. It's totally, you're totally covered.
They're about to fall over on us.
Yeah.
But my point is not that I'm emulating modern consoles now. My point is that all the great leaps and bounds were done, and they were more impressive in the late 90s. And
and
that's when everyone was going crazy. We need to translate this. All the big games are pretty much done. All the Dragon Quest we didn't get translated have been translated, and then they were retranslated officially, eventually by like Square and Final Fantasy and things like that. Like the big games are out of the way. But, you know, the scene is still prolific. They're still putting things out. But the biggest things happened in the past, and this episode, for the rest of it, is going to be devoted to talking about the 12 translations that we think you should play. Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll get into that now. This list works is I sort of put it in order, and not to speak ill of anyone's work, but these are all important. Oh. These are all really well done.
Burn.
I just kind of put them in my order that's in my head of quality of game plus ambition of translation equals the order this list is in.
Ah, okay.
So,
and you know, I mean, there's so much more now.
That was
15 years out. So.
Yeah, the collaboration of people who made this possible have never actually met one another, and they won't know which one you're talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly, yes.
Nice.
But I want to say, if you work in translation, we don't name one of your games, it's not because we don't like it, just because we wanted to narrow this down to 12, and I've played so many translations, and I appreciate way more than what's just on this list.
Except
but,
for you, Zero Wing, we do not like
it. Oh, I hate it. But, I mean, this list could have easily been all RPGs, and as much as I would like to talk about all RPGs for an hour and a half, I know that would be boring for you guys, probably.
Talk about some Seventh Saga? Let's do it.
Oh, God, no. So, yeah, I tried to pick a mix of RPGs and action and, like, other things, too. So let's get started with our first game. And this game is kind of infamous in that it's one of the few Japanese Xbox games that probably should have come out here because it's just so American in nature.
Yes.
And that is Metal Wolf Chaos.
Yes. Okay, yeah. This is the one I
2004
played.
Xbox, right. And the translation was released in December 2004 by Nemsmole. And talk about it, Chris. What is Metal Wolf Chaos?
Metal Wolf Chaos is about President, what's his
name? Wilson.
President
he's related
Michael
to
Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson,
his
a.k.a.
Name?
Woody.
And I sent you the video that we made years ago. Like,
yes.
With the HBO theme in it?
Yeah.
I love it.
I put the HBO theme in there just because it was so epic.
It's a modern renaissance of that HBO theme.
It's the president who must rise up against a coup created by the vice president,
yes,
using only armored suit, like a giant battle mech suit.
And like front mission style mech suit.
And it's like that's already really silly. But the game is really violent and very bloody, and you are slaughtering the U.S. military as this amazingly cliched American character as seen, as depicted by... I love when Japan just... Well, this is America, right?
Right.
So
like, it's the most like exaggerated. But like the night we did that, we were working on it. It was a classic Games Radar top 7 presidents, because why not? It was an election year, so that at least tells us it was 2008.
Right.
It was 2008?
It has to be. Why else would we do a presidents one?
I'm pretty sure 1UP did something like that too.
It's just one of those like.
Yeah, it's like everyone
presidents.
Has to do it. Yeah.
So we did the top 7, but then it was like we're going to sit here and find a copy of this game online. try to get it to work on an original Xbox, and it's like getting into midnight, 1 in the morning, and like Chris finally gets it to work. And I mean, it was just this back and forth. Everybody's getting angry and hot because the air conditioning in an office building turns off after a certain time. Yeah. And like, just this saga just to make that video so like 100 people will watch it and go, huh.
It looks even sadder on YouTube right now because I think Radar spit all their stuff out of Bright Cove and into YouTube.
Right,
so it's like 160 views. That was like the product of like 3 days of no sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that the one I was like edit? I was like capturing the video in a boo-boo costume because it was Halloween?
It was Halloween. You had a... yes. Yes. Yeah. It was a bad year. And I was editing that episode of Talk Radar and I was putting a bunch of Aqua music in it because I'm like, no one's paying attention.
Right.
Aqua has a song called Halloween. It's on an album of Aquarius.
It's a super, super, super fun game.
It's
it
really
looks
cool.
Like it. I mean, it has the kind of From Software appeal where it's just not that polished, but it looks like all the weird stuff in it more than makes up for it. You know?
If you're a fan like me of Earth Defense Force, now replace bugs with innocent American soldiers.
And it's pretty accurate.
Now we have a game.
I kind of feel like a lot of people think, like, oh, wacky Japan. But in this case, I feel like the people who made this game are much more savvy than they're probably giving credit for. Because this kind of feels... People don't like politics on Retronauts, but I'm just saying what I'm interpreting this game to be. It feels like a reaction to the uber-patriotism post-9/11. It came out in 2004, towards the end of the Bush era. I feel like this is sort of a Japanese satire of that. Mm-hmm. You know, because, like... I feel like it would have come out here, but, you know, 9/11 happened, and political statements in games are dangerous unless they're super either ambiguous or conservative. So I have a feeling that that's what kept this out of America. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
It had to be something like that, because just that it does appear on that OXM, I think...
There was a demo disc.
That's what it was. Yeah. That's what we used.
We used that for the intro. Like
right.
A lot of that other gameplay is, like, way later in the game. What we call, can I debug...
Oh yeah,
Xboxes. And those games play burnt ISOs that you get on the internet. These are all hand quotes here, internet. Right. But don't do that.
Don't do it.
But you can.
Or the president will shoot you from his mouth.
Yes,
this is before we got a pardon from Seth Killian.
President Michael Wilson going after Vice President Richards. I love that shot of the Washington Monument memorial pool opening up and the jet flying out of it.
Yes, that's amazing.
It doesn't make any sense because the pool, but, even when it shows the jet flying out, the wingspan are larger than the pool it just came out of.
Right.
It's beautiful.
It's style over substance to the nth degree.
And then I made a little sizzle of it and then put the HBO 1980s theme music.
We'll link to that on the blog
post,
definitely.
You know Obama's got that.
Exactly. You know he's
waiting to
put on the mech suit.
Basically like the X-Men Blackbird in the lagoon between the Lincoln Memorial and the...
Yeah. Okay, let's party.
God, I love that last line. Let's party!
Yes, if you want to see the president do a backflip out of the White House in a robot and yell, let's party,
I mean,
this
is the
game.
The voice acting is great in the...
English.
In the tradition.
It's all English. Yeah,
I
believe they're Canadians. Too.
Oh, they're Canadians? Yeah. I assumed it was like, okay, we found people in Japan that speak English. Get them in a room. Don't tell them the context.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That is true.
I kind of prefer that in a strange way, like House of the Dead style acting. It's just like, this guy isn't in English, but he's speaking English phonetically. Isn't that good enough for you guys? Of course it is.
Yeah.
Metal Wolf. Planning on wiping out New York this time? You, enemy of the people, I, Richard Hawk, won't let you get away with it. I, Richard Hawk, will uphold American justice without fail. Yeah! Suck on my missile punch!
So yeah, that's Metal Wolf Chaos. I mean, all the dialogue is in English, like we were talking about. This just translates menus and stuff. And
yes, which is important because, you know, I mean, yeah, the wacky dialogue is great and you can get a lot out of the game. Mm. But I mean, if you do actually want to play it a bit seriously and experience the whole thing, you know, figuring out some of the menus and, you know, the names of certain things will help you because it does get to be a very challenging game.
And we
much
should,
like,
and Metal Wolf, you have played it.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I played it for issue 4 of Scroll, and so, yeah, I made sure to...
I love it. I would love to have a better release of that game somewhere.
True.
It,
well, you can.
There needs to be some kind of, like, criterion or, like, a trauma anchor based, right.
Like a Rhino, how Rhino video
there
used
you go,
to be,
like a
you know,
factory yeah. for games. Like we're just going to republish this old game. We know it might be a money loser. We'll make it a giant special edition. Everybody will be happy.
And I should say, everyone listening to this, please go to Retronauts.com because we're going to have all the information you need to know about these games. Where to find the translations? We're not going to tell you where to find the games. It's up to you.
Oh yeah, but... we'll have more information at LaserTimePodcast.com.
Now it's so it's
we will okay. not.
It's warp, so they warp, will, folks. Oops,
it's a contest. So they will have the ROM links.
No, yeah. no. God, please don't. Nobody post those. Site's in enough trouble as it is.
So we're moving on to number 11, and this game is Internal Section, released in 1999 for the PlayStation, and the translation was released in 2008 by GameHacking.org. And this is part of Square's experimental, aka profitable era, in which they right. sort of dabbled in everything, you know, because they had money. And weirdly enough, I didn't get a chance to play this game, but it's sort of a mix between Tempest and Rez. Is that a good way to put it? Anybody?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know it fits in that sort of. That pantheon, I think.
Right. And have you guys seen the video of this or at all?
No.
Okay. It's basically a music game, and you sort of go down a tunnel as in, you know, Tempest style.
Right.
It has music tracks on it, but in the sort of weird mini trend in the PlayStation era where you would generate content based on music CDs.
Right. Like Monster Rancher stuff.
Yeah, like VibRibbon. You can create levels based on music CDs you put in your console. So
like Audio Surf.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
With a giant awful disc,
but like with
an
a giant
upside down PlayStation 1.
Yeah, like an album of discs in front of you, just like, well, REM Monster will give me the monster in Monster Hunter, right? That's yeah. what I heard. Anyhow, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot in the game to translate. I mean, have you any familiarity with this game at all, Ray?
The point of this is, you know, much like Metal Wolf Chaos, it's like mm-hmm. you get to experience it a bit more fully. Because, I mean, you can play it just fine if you do get, you know, the original Japanese and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine game on its own, but it's just like one of those little things where, you know, that extra push of having actual English in it that you can read and understand a bit better, I think helps you enjoy the game a bit more. And it is a cool game, and it is, you know, of the time, and... Yeah, it's a good run.
Yeah, and it's I guess it's not surprising it didn't come over here because there were a few of those weird Square games. Like they had a weird visual novel that didn't come over here. Can you think of anything else that of that era?
Racing Lagoon.
I thought we got like the PS2 one, didn't we?
There was no sequel.
Well, what was Driving Emotion? Was that also Square?
That was just Gran Turismo ripoff.
Okay, was that yeah. Square?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Everybody had to have one back.
They were channeling Rad Racer, and just really wanted to bring that.
That's
back.
True. They kind of pioneered racing, and then just jumped the hell out of that genre.
They did.
Weird.
It was Sakaguchi, the Final Fantasy guy. I think he was a producer on Rad Racer.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Uematsu did the music.
Yes.
Quit showing off, you guys.
And he also did the 3D effects single-handedly.
Holy shit.
<Did he? laughs>
That's not true.
I think that's Nasir Gebelli, the crazy Iranian programmer.
He also played Lucas in The Wizard.
Man, this guy gets around.
I know.
That's not a child. It's a 34-year-old Iranian guy.
I just found out about that guy like a year ago, and I was like, what?
He's responsible for all of the like 3D World Runner.
Yes,
that effect on the NES. Unfortunately, he's also responsible for all the bugginess in Secret of Mana, and I think that's his last project with Square. I don't know what he does now.
Like that Final Fantasy III story of like, yeah, we moved him to California because his visa ran out, and then Japan team moved to Sacramento with him to finish the game. It's like that entire concept, like the idea of that happening... is just like, bonkers to me.
They valued him that much.
Yeah,
knowing
what Japan is like now, I'm like, they would spend that much money to send a team.
He was like a god of Apple II programming at the time. So
yeah.
Had to be.
To have him would be.
Do we know what happened to him, Ray? I mean, he's still around.
I assume he's just retired.
Okay.
I don't know.
He's counting his Final Fantasy royalties.
I was going to say, getting the Final Fantasy III.
All those lucrative royalties in the games industry.
That don't exist. We'll be right back. So number 10 is Wonder Project J, which came out in 1994 for the Super Famicom, and the translation was released in August 01 by Whacktax. So this is a really totally amazing game. Did you guys look into this at all, or do you know about it at all?
No, I never heard of it.
It's sort of a Peter Molyneux-style game made by Almanic, and they developed, have you heard of Evo, The Search for Eden for the SNES?
Yeah.
A really weird kind of broken sim game where you control like different forms of life throughout different eras and level them up and give them different parts and stuff. This game is sort of following up on the weird Princess Maker craze of Japan from the early 90s, but it's less, much less pervy than that. You basically raise...
Finally.
Finally. So I can raise a princess and not be weird. You raise a robot boy from birth. You're like a little fairy, and that's sort of like your avatar on the screen, like your pointer. And throughout the game, you sort of teach him right from wrong. You reward him for doing the right things. You punish him for doing the wrong things.
Give him $10 for his A's on his report card.
Exactly, yeah.
Trying desperately, hopelessly explain to him what love is.
It's always about learning about love, isn't it?
Me and your mother.
You'll break, David.
It always reminds me of Pac-Man 2. Have you guys played that game? Where you play an omniscient god steering Pac-Man around in this world that he doesn't even know.
Oh, yes. The side-scrolly weird thing.
Yeah, he's like this weird guy with a personality disorder. He just like his personality just turns on a dime.
Right, yes.
And you play a cursor that's meant to like, you know, protect him in this hostile
that
world.
That really does show you the true nature of Pac-Man.
Yeah, he needs medicated. Yes. But, I mean, Ray, can you talk about this game at all? I mean, I need to play this game. Every time I see it, it looks... I mean, the way it looks is just fantastic. I mean, they were really going for a Studio Ghibli-style look without the official license or anything like that. It's really lush, really amazing animation, because they're kind of syncing all their animation into this one character on the screen.
Right.
Can you talk any more about it, Ray? I mean...
Well, I think you hit all the good points of it, but I had heard about it for a long time. I mean, I remember seeing it in EGM, one of their international previews or whatever. And yeah, I always wanted to try it out, and I have not yet, but...
that brings us to today.
I'm going to rectify that, because I was just looking at videos of this and reading about it, and it looks so cool.
There's a sequel for N64, and that's Project J2, where you are not a robot boy, but a robot girl this time.
Oh, who would want to play that?
I
know.
Still not pervy, though.
Gross. That'll never sell.
I can't project myself as a woman. Meanwhile, I'll go play this werewolf game.
Right.
Now we're talking. So yeah, I mean, Wonder Project J, I don't think it came out here because it was such an untested genre for us. It was kind of a weird idea. I mean,
I'm loving the pictures I'm finding on the internet.
Well, it's like when I see things like really Sprung that came over or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm like, how did, what?
Yeah, it's like,
is that the soda in Futurama?
That's Slurm.
Slurm. Sprung was like the weird DS dating game.
Like
with
DS
that Way
launched,
Forward. Was
launched,
that Way Forward?
Was it Way Forward?
I think it was their secret shame. I mean, they've done licensed stuff before.
I don't think so.
Okay. I apologize if it wasn't. So yeah, that was Wonder Project J. So, moving on to number 9, Ray, want to introduce this one?
Yes, this is Gunman's Proof, or Gunpalu.
And
this was released late in the Super Nintendo's life, Super Famicom's life.
I love that box art.
Yeah.
He's got a pink diamond for a mouth. Yeah, sorry.
It's weird
jokes
that
don't work.
Gunman's Proof came out like in a post Final Fantasy VII world. There was this weird Link to the Past. To the Past clone
it
on
really
Super Famicom.
Is, it it very much looks like Link to the Past, but also has bits of, you know, things that might remind you of Earthbound.
Right.
It's kind of like that weird in-between spot between those two games, artistically. But yeah, it is a really weird Link to the Past clone.
The giant gun icon where the hookshot should be. pretty great.
I don't think it plays as much as Link to the Past as you would think based on how it looks. It's kind of more of a shooter, but in a Link to the Past style world.
Well, if Link had a gun, I think this is what it would be like. Yeah.
That's what's going to happen in the next installment, right?
I might be misremembering, but that's kind of how Crystallis played, right? It seemed more projectile-based for some reason.
Once you powered up your sword, you could do that, but yeah.
Anyway, I think this game was one of those that was sort of like Earthbound. It had like a celebrity behind it, so I think like a Japanese comedian helped develop the story and whatnot.
That's
I mean,
it,
what,
Is that what the name is on the box art behind the logo?
I think it's like it says like it's a weird world or something in the circle up behind him. It's a strange world. Yeah, I did want to mention that this translation group called Aeon Genesis translated it, and it, I think it's basically just one guy, isn't it? I
pretty
assume
much,
he gets
yeah.
help, but
yeah,
this
yeah.
guy, I'm going to link to his page. He does so many of these translations single handedly. Mm. He's got like 30 complete translations just from the last 10 years of work. He's amazing, and I interviewed him for one up a while ago. I'll link to that article too.
I used to shit on him originally because he like retranslated Rockman 2. I was like, "What? Who cares?"
So that was
but
like,
now he's coming to his own.
That was like he did that during lunch. Was like, exactly. "Everlasting peace, blah blah blah." Let's go.
Yeah, for peace that lasts forever.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation of it.
So, anything else to say about Gunman's Proof? I think it's.
I want to kind of want to play it.
It looks pretty neat. Like the name actually reminds me of a cool game on 3DS now. What, Gunman Clive?
Gunman Clive.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I played that over. I took a vacation this summer and like just over the. Break yeah. played it
me too.
Really cool like visual style beat it on duck mode you get to play as a duck that can't fight it's,
oh wow
it's super cute
is that a Ghouls and Ghosts reference
is it
possibly
when Arthur maybe this is Genesis duck. Version is a duck
well
right?
it depends on what armor you're wearing he'll turn into different
right.
things but maybe that's what they're I'm not sure what the reference was but it's great music cool I mean it's like $3 game totally worth it
it's the most reasonably priced things on the 3DS eShop.
Gunman's Proof has good music as well. Mm. Like,
ooh.
You know, you might
who was the
enjoy
publisher or developer of this?
Published
game?
By ASCII. I forget the developer or anyone else
involved. Oh, you said ASCII. For some reason, Asmic came in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Damn
saw
dinosaur.
That pink dinosaur.
Just like, I don't... Am I... whatever.
But yeah, weird little Super NES curio.
Yeah.
ASCII of boomer fame. Sorry, Asmic.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you.
Sorry. Let's move on to number 8, Clock Tower, released 1995 for the Super Famicom. Translation released in September 01 by Aeon Genesis again.
Ooh, September 01.
Oh, and actually September 10th.
Damn.
So, as you were celebrating Clock Tower being translated,
wow.
you had no idea what to expect.
I can actually, my calendar brain kicks in here because, one, that's a Monday.
The only reason you would have been up that early.
Well, that was when I was working overnights at Toys R Us, and that's also the day I signed up for GameFAQs.
Oh.
Like you can go back and look at your like first signed in. It's September 10th, 2001.
I have a really embarrassing Misadventures of Tron Bond review there that I want to be taken down.
I think I have some bad user reviews there.
Please don't look for it, everyone. But
I think I reviewed like the Lord of the Rings Super NES game or something.
It's part of a little audio drama, and what we just dug up at work is back in the day, PR had to type things out.
Oh,
and they just happened to type out when Jean-Claude Van Damme was doing press for the Street Fighter movie.
Oh man, it's
every
amazing.
Single written word from every talk show he's on. Regis, so how you doing, John? Arsenio, we have written transcripts of all of these shows.
Oh my god, I read the Letterman interview and I was just like, God, it's like I'm there
on physical paper.
That's amazing.
And sorry, I had to.
No, don't worry. That was a good story. But Clock Tower, this is actually the origins of Clock Tower. Our Clock Tower was actually Clock Tower 2.
Yes.
This was the first one. And this sort of like innovated in that weird gap between Alone in the Dark and Resident Evil. This is 1 year before Resident Evil. But it was obviously inspired by this sort of point and click adventure genre, which was booming at the time, if you can believe that. There was a time when it was booming.
Jensen, what's her name?
Jane Jensen. Yeah, she was Gabriel Knight, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That, LucasArts, obviously. But with this one, it was a point and click adventure game for the SNES, so that might tell you why I didn't come over here, because that was sort of like, what? Okay, why not?
Yeah, but what was the other one? Like King Arthur's World?
Yeah, that was like an SNES mouse. I don't know if this supported the mouse. I don't think it did, but it was
too bad.
It was made by Human Entertainment, who made a lot of weird, cool games. Unfortunately, they're out of business now. But this game, if you played a Clock Tower game, you know you usually play a helpless girl, and the main mechanic of the game is hiding from this guy named Scissor Man, who comes after you without warning. And
it's a very cool, like very tense, in an era where those words were not really thrown around a lot for video games. Like it really got that tension of being hunted.
And I played this game, and it is tense for a side-scrolling SNES point-click adventure. It's very tense, and weirdly enough, this game is sort of directly ripped from the Dario Argento film Phenomena. And there are YouTube videos that sort of line up scenes and characters.
I'm trying to imagine that on the box in a Toys R Us.
Don't tell Dario Argento. We didn't get permission. Yeah. But obviously the main character is Jennifer Connelly. she looks exactly like her, things like that.
That was when she was most beautiful.
I want to check her age before I agree with you. But,
character's name is Jennifer.
The weird thing is, like...
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. And the weird thing is, like, this game looks so much better than the other Clock Tower games because the other Clock Tower games are, like, early PlayStation. So it's, like, these weird, like, faceless mannequin people. And
it's like that weird jump where it was, like, the most detailed sprites of the era and rudimentary
polygons. And then somebody sneezed a bunch of jagged triangles in your eyes.
Another podcast I listen to calls them Dorito people. Because they're just... that's a watch out for fireballs.
Please, like, let's not throw names later. Yes.
So I've been talking about the Clock Tower a lot. Anyone have anything to add? I mean,
I actually totally forgot about what inspired the Clock Tower series. I forgot we got two.
Right. It eventually turned into Haunting Ground, which Capcom. Wait, did Capcom get the rights to Clock Tower?
They published.
Right.
Capcom published Clock Tower 3.
Yeah. Right.
Which is not Haunting Ground, but it is very
similar. What am
similar.
I thinking of that is sort of like the spiritual successor, or am I just making shit up?
You might, I guess.
Haunting Ground,
Capcom. It was really around the same time, so.
I was thinking about Clock Tower recently, and that not that they were all Resident Evil ripoffs, but like that genre was being oversaturated during the clock, during Resident Evil, and I wanted to go revisit all of those games, because every time you read about, I forget which one I was reading about, they can't do anything graphically very impressive, but from a horror angle, they can one-up the last game and make something much more horrific. And
really
some of the descriptions of these games are really grotesque and approach areas we would never do now with the level of realism that we have.
Right. But like the abstraction made it actually worse because you had to put the pieces together in your mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Brent.
It definitely led to a lot of like games where you're playing like Overblood or whatever that's like, this is a survival horror. No, this is
the
just,
one with Rose in it? Rose?
Rose? Space Hulk?
Ignore
anyone?
Ignore me.
Okay. Oh, Rule of Rose.
Rule of Rose,
I remember that.
That and Haunting Ground were these simultaneous launches where it's like a PS2 survival horror game with a girl and a dog. It was like the weird ant Bug's Life syndrome happening in games. Although
an Armageddon Deep Impact situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Volcano, Dante's Peak.
Yep.
Let's just list things that are similar.
Sure. We're halfway through another episode at that point.
Yes.
This is the analogy portion of the SAT test.
Exactly. I recommend this game. I mean, as hard as it is to play survival horror these days, especially antiquated survival horror, if you emulate this, and you're probably going to be emulating it.
Super Famicom, though, right?
Super Famicom.
So, yeah. I can...
Also, with the magic of quick saves, you can get yourself out of anything, and that's really helpful with games like these. So, that's Clock Tower.
Let's do a Retronaut stream. We'll do it right now.
Ooh. I think we need internet first.
Okay.
But,
come over
let's...
to my house. Jesus, guys.
After party. Moving on to number 7, we have Famicom Detective Club Part 2, which came out in 1998, for Christ's sake, for the Super Famicom. Obviously, there's a reason why we didn't get it.
Yeah.
It's a remake.
Yeah, it's a remake of an old Famicom game from like 86, 85?
Sure.
Yeah,
later
than that. But, I mean, there's a weird history of Nintendo that is never acknowledged by Americans because we didn't see these games, but... Like a lot of other companies, they were jumping on the Japanese adventure game bandwagon, which sort of is what eventually became visual novels as we know them today. So, Portopia, Serial Murder Case from 1983, made by Yuji Horii, who did Dragon Quest, that was the first kind of seminal Japanese adventure game. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had played Mystery House and things like that, but that was sort of like, this is what these games should be. And then everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon, including Nintendo, and they made a game called Famicom Detective Club.
Right. Ahead, specifically, Ben. I mean, that just the detective adventure game
blew
the hell up in Japan.
So, is that kind of what a modern representation like Hotel Dusk? Is that
I would say more like Phoenix Wright and things like that, right? I mean, there are puzzles.
There's always a murder involved. Yeah.
But, I mean, do you want to continue about this one?
I mean, gosh, yeah. I mean, I'm not a super expert on it or anything, but yeah, I mean, it is... Like that.
Is anyone?
Give me 5 seconds on Wikipedia.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, imagine what...
I'll be rewriting the wiki as he's doing it.
What I like, imagine what a Super Nintendo game is going to look like in 1998 with... everyone knows how to exploit the hell out of that system. Mm-hmm. It is like watching a pixelated anime, basically.
Wow.
And it's like the Super Metroid graphic guy, I forget his name, but he is behind the graphics in this game, and they're just as detailed as the you see in Super Metroid.
Especially if you're not animating a whole lot, you could probably really crank out some
impressive stuff. The faces are moving and things, but I mean, they're full bodies, but the animation is so impressive.
Came
in the game.
On a virtual console.
Only in Japan, though.
In Japan? Yeah. Well, I'm sort of wondering, I think you guys would know a little better. Why wouldn't you, as a company, just like, can we have your fan translation?
That is something we'll talk about. I mean, I think it's a point of pride for a lot of companies.
I think so, too.
Where the Mother 3 translation, which we'll talk about, spoilers, they were straight up like, we will give you this for free, Nintendo. We want people to play Mother 3. Take our translation, release it however you want. And there's, like, no comment, you know, sure.
Yeah, there's not a lot of comment. I mean...
Well,
it sets a weird precedent.
I think they don't want to encourage what they would see as... They don't want to do what they would see as encouraging piracy.
There's a lot of wink, wink, stop telling us.
Yeah, exactly.
The more everyone just agree that this is happening...
Everybody, right. And yes, and let us approach you.
Yeah.
That's how that works. You can't... A company cannot be...
Approach who about what, Chris?
I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
There has been precedents set... I think XSEED has used fan translations for EES.
Have they?
Yeah, for the EES, for a few of the EES games. Only a few, but I should really look up which ones those are, because I keep citing that, and I forget which ones they are.
It was like the first couple, they don't really do it.
But anymore. Yeah, this game, I haven't played it. It's actually on my tablet, waiting to be played for on a flight or something, but it's a really long, really deep, really moody, like surprisingly moody and atmospheric game for Super Nintendo. Super Famicom.
Yeah.
But
I would say if you think the plot of Persona 4 is a bit too much for you to stomach, try this out. And it's a bit the same. You know, it involves Japanese high school kids and solving a murder around that, and has that anime style, but it does not bright yellow and popping things at you.
Yeah,
it's weird. The thing about it coming out in 98, because what was really weird again, that Godzilla 98 movie, Super Godzilla was released. In 1998 in the U.S. And
this is Brett's Mystery Science Theater.
I thought that was Ernest.
Ernest. Okay. Ernest, you wouldn't believe the places I can take
you. I'm waiting for that podcast still. I think we all are as a nation.
Well, I'll be like become the expert. I read the guy's book that he put out this year.
It's out? The John Cherry book?
Keeper of the Clown.
Okay.
Anyway. but yeah, it was really weird. Like in 1998, seeing a new Super NES game, and I remember I started at Toys R Us in 99, and then it's one of those things where I look back now and I'm like, why wouldn't I buy all of? I knew better at that time. By 99, I knew what was going on, and I remember seeing they still had sealed copies of Castlevania 4, still had sealed Super Godzilla. And like, it didn't just come out that year, but like, I bought a sealed Castlevania Bloodlines in like 2001, and I'm like, why wouldn't I just? I was the same guy who was like looking on eBay for sealed Zelda. Oh, here's some sealed games you could just have. That would be cool, right?
Like around that time at Toys R Us, I noticed that they had a bunch of, for some reason, copies of the original Final Fantasy and Star Tropics for $10, all sealed. I was like, why didn't I buy all of these pay for college?
With a non-moist map? Was that the game?
One you dipped into the water,
I cannot believe I did that. In the late 90s with a box copy of Star Tropics. Look at that. It does work.
I never actually had the letter. I only rented it. But as much as I wanted to believe...
I found it sealed and ripped it open and put the thing in the water.
I wanted to have that like immersion moment, but the one thing that ruins it is at the bottom of the letter. It's like a letter from your uncle to you.
It's just like, what, four letters? Three letters? It was so easy to look up. At the time, I just didn't... I wasn't a fan yet. I didn't know the game was going to be like any fun to me. I really did like the Star Tropics.
But the one thing that would ruin the immersion for me is at the bottom of the letter, after it's like, goodbye, Mike, Dr. Jones, is a do not eat this letter. It's like a safety warning from Nintendo.
I thought you were going to say like copyright 1997 Nintendo. Yeah. It's like, thanks.
It's like, come on, Dr. J. I'm not like an idiot.
I'm glad the legal line was there, because I might have been confused and thought I own Star Tropics. And just putting that there.
Awesome. So our next one, number six, is Sweet Home, which came out for 1989 for the Famicom. The translation was released in June of 2000 by Gaijin Productions, and Suicidal Translations is probably still not around based on the name, I'm guessing. I know Brett and Chris, you guys seem to be most interested in this. At least you told me a little bit about it before.
Well, I know we kicked off a feature called Throwback Thursdays where we'll stream an old game, and Greg, who speaks pretty, like, unbelievably fluent Japanese.
Well, he lived in Japan for 4 years.
Yeah, so we were gonna load it up because guess what? It's Halloween, yeah. And it's could you call it Capcom's first stab at a horror?
Well, I mean, it is kind of in a weird way. Like you could argue, but like a real survival horror game. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
In the old days, and it served as like a direct inspiration for RE because it does have like you're in a mansion
and the door opening animation.
The
too,
door,
right?
The door, yeah. The transition, yeah. And there's characters you play as, and they each have different things, including two characters. One of them has a lighter, and one of them has a key, which is basically a lockpick. Uh-huh. That's Chris and Jill from RE1.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
There's just all kinds of like, wow, this is kind of the birth of Resident Evil, and it just never came out over here.
What a I want to play it just because of the name.
Like, yeah, you know what it sounds creepy as hell.
Sweet Home.
And well, I had to look this up, but it is actually, I didn't realize that until recently, so I started working there, based on a movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Same name.
Yeah, and that trailer is messed up. It's on YouTube, and it is like...
Is it as good as Houseu? I love that.
It's similar, where you're just like, what? I don't know. What is happening?
Yeah. What are they on?
I cannot wait to play that more stuff. And
at first I was like, why would Capcom choose this game of all games, a licensed game, to like make a weird survival experimental RPG? But yeah. I was like, they were kind of treating a lot of licensed properties as just another Capcom game. So yeah. I guess it wasn't so strange. Ray, did you have anything to add about Sweet Home?
I'm afraid not. But it was one of those other sorts of like holy grail translations, because like once... I think Shinji Mikami mentioned it. It was like, oh, okay.
Here it is. I think it became like a common thing to talk about with Resident Evil in the in sort of the RE2, RE3 era. People were kind of discovering it, and that's why this translation came out in 00.
And they may have wanted, the company may have wanted to keep making it, but didn't have the rights to...
Oh, the movie, yeah.
Anything, I mean, that same thing with Little Nemo, where it's like, Little Nemo as a character is public domain, but the cartoon movie that game is based on...
based off a very specific movie.
Right.
Now, that is owned by someone else, and to even bring it up is like, so what?
Sorry.
Weird rights issues.
Anyone want to split this sliver of this niche? Anyone want to split this three ways?
Pay way forward to remake it.
Yeah.
Wait, secrets? Maybe. Nah. I got to say, I played a little bit of this game. It's a little intimidating, but I feel like I said, with the magic of save states and sort of maybe with the help of a FAQ.
Is that because it's hard or because
I think it's just because it's like classic. It's not super unfair, but it's just like... it's a lot of banging your head against things and trying different things because of just the way games were made back then. Like this kind of secrets-heavy Japanese games where...
And then they'll basically make no progress during the day and go to school the next day and figure it out from a friend.
Yeah, or like steal someone's Nintendo Power at lunch or whatever. So
it reminds me a lot of... Didn't really reflect too much, but Resident Evil Gaiden always reminded me. Kind of retroactively reminded me of Sweet Home.
Have you played that, Brett? I hear nothing. But
I have it. Like I got the cart. Like it was one of those Toys R Us things where I walked. I was working there at the time and was like, "What? I'll take this." And then I played it once and was like, "I don't want to do this."
That's really
anymore.
True. I'm glad you brought that up because it has RPG combat, just like Sweet Home does, and I'm sure it has like items and weird like puzzles and things like that.
Just
weird.
I found out about Sweet Home probably around the same time that came out, and was like, "Oh, I wonder if this is just supposed to be." Well, at the time, I probably thought like, "Oh, did they just rename it Resident Evil Gaiden and put Leon in there?" And then
I
found out that's not the case.
Yeah. You can finally play as Barry.
Yes.
Poor Barry.
Can we talk about
Sweet Home? Yeah.
This is not about Sweet Home at all. It's just I happened to do this before I came here, and I thought, why not? You can totally cut this if you want. It's Halloween. Love Halloween. Do you guys have a favorite Halloween candy? Because I do.
Ooh.
There's one that everybody else hates. Usually,
candy corn.
It is candy corn.
Yeah, I hate candy corn.
I got it. Well, candy corn's in the same league with ribbon candy. Those weird orange and black
1940s taffy torture candy.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like the weird, like Depression era candy.
Circus peanuts and Swedish fish.
It's honey and sugar.
Big thumbs down.
Swedish fish, but circus peanuts are like, what do you do with those?
So, throw them away.
Yeah.
It is Halloween timing, and I went and got a ton of candy corn. And,
whoa. Wow.
Why?
Ray, what kind of candy corn is that?
What does it say?
That's
candy corn with the brown ends.
Colon blocking chocolate.
No, it's
s'mores.
It's
s'mores. Excuse me.
S'more flavored candy corn.
Yes.
Regular flavored candy corn.
Okay.
And Look at this. M&M's making a candy corn.
Dear Lord.
White chocolate M&M.
Hmm. Is candy corn trending on Twitter yet? What's candy corn's clout?
And I would just like to offer this to all of you since this
In
is basically
7 years of knowing
of
you,
show.
I've never seen you bring this much anything to any place.
Nope.
A bounty of corn.
Special occasion.
We appreciate it.
It was it's that Walgreens buy two get one,
right.
buy seven get half off kind of thing. And
well, this
we
CVS opened up in our neighborhood after like being burned out husk for 3 years, and
here.
I just
want to try one.
No.
Not I think yet. I'm good.
They just
I appreciate the gesture.
They
though.
Invented, I guess, I'd never seen this before, the Cadbury Scream Egg.
Oh my god!
And I bought one, and I have yet to eat it. I'm like anticipating.
There's a live mouse inside.
Oh, that's delicious. You
I'll
guys
tell
need
you what.
Try.
Maybe we can send this to Aaron Davies.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks for yes.
Send him candy corn to New Zealand. I'm sure it'll be affordable.
Yeah.
Oh,
30
oh,
bucks.
Wow.
We're going to move on, though, to number 5, which is Radical Dreamers, The Unstealable Jewel.
Which I've never played, but I love the music.
Yeah. It is fantastic. It came out in 1996 with the Super Famicom via the Bandai Satellaview service, which was this way ahead of its time thing where
Not
you
Bandai.
Would... Oh, I'm sorry. I messed that up.
Yeah.
Who made it?
It was a joint thing from Nintendo and a radio station called Saint Geeka.
Ah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know why I thought Bandai.
Hey,
my apologies.
You're tuned to Saint Geeka, playing the hits every hour.
Let me say up front, we did
go for it.
Talk about this on Retronauts like in 2009.
There was a Chrono Cross episode, I think.
Chrono
it came
Cross,
out.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. So it involved one of the translators, Adam Fitch.
Because this is the bridge to Chrono Cross.
Yeah.
From Trigger to Cross, right?
Yeah,
pretty
much.
Like the comparison I use, this is like the Star Fox to Chrono Cross's Star Fox 64, where it's like they took all of these ideas and
right.
things that weren't technically perfected and they reworked them into a new form in this with increased technology. So
I was just looking at it and trying to... It didn't get released over here, but there had to be some idiotic executive at some long-defunct company that... It's the 80s. Why wouldn't you release a game with the word radical in it?
Oh, yes.
It's called... There's no NES games with radical
totally,
in it.
There's totally rad.
Well,
there's
like
totally
90,
radical.
This was 96, though, so
yeah.
it was done.
Oh,
nothing
yeah.
was nothing was radical. There's
things
Kid,
were...
Kid Nicky, Radical Ninja.
Yeah.
Even Totally Rad was just called Totally.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Man.
So yeah, this is a strange like visual novel with RPG, well, kind of RPG combat. Sort of like
it
what
has
do you want to do?
Some adventure stuff in it. Like
that
you
too.
Choose what to do and
yeah. It feels like sort of like an advanced visual novel in that there's
sure.
a little more sort of like more like a choose your own adventure though.
Yeah.
Like but yeah, this was sort of the prototype for the story of Chrono Cross released via this satellite service. So basically if you have a copy of this game, you downloaded it in the late 90s
mm-hmm.
and kept it. And that's the only way there's a physical copy of this game.
Yeah.
Luckily,
so it's like on a hard drive of your system somewhere. Or is there a cart?
I think it was just a cart, right?
It was this unit that sat underneath. That was like the
yes.
receiver. And then you had the cartridge on top that also had like a mini cartridge slot. And then you could store things in that.
I remember there was like
people.
The reading, like before I really knew what was going on, like BS Zelda, BS
right.
whatever.
Yeah,
and like, why is it BS?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Broadcast satellite.
Yeah. This is bull puck. Yeah.
Bull satellite.
So, yeah, I mean, I've played this, but I haven't finished it. Have you guys ever played it?
No,
but I'm the most curious about it. And
it's
I
really
remember
cool.
looking like, well, I remember I was reading about it in a Rare Game article, because, yes, it's a Rare Game. And I went and looked, well, what's eBay say about it? And all it is people selling cases for Radical Dreamers, like people who have designed
yeah.
physical cases for the
right.
game, because such a thing does not exist.
Yes.
Right.
And will never.
And, like, it's weird that, okay, the characters from Chrono Cross are in the game, and
mm-hmm.
so is a lot of the, well, not a lot, but a lot of the really, I keep saying a lot, some of the really good music in Chrono Cross mm-hmm. is in this game.
Oh,
it
really?
Exists in Super Famicom sound
Ooh,
format.
Okay.
So, you can easily compare, like, I think The Unstolen Jewel, or is that one of the songs that's,
yes.
There's at least three or four songs that are really standout Chrono Cross songs. They're
okay.
in this game. Like,
Cross, one of my, like... It, Trigger always gets all the love, and Cross
yeah.
is in this weird like, oh, it's pretty good, I guess. The soundtrack is phenomenal.
It's one of the best, definitely.
Yeah,
and
I've never played, by the
That's
way.
One of the first soundtracks. It was like maybe the third or fourth, but that I imported for like $60. And back when it was like, I can either get a game or I can get a soundtrack to a game. I'm going to get the Chrono
Cross. There are so many songs on that soundtrack, and it is it's every song is so different. It's great. But like I said, a lot of these ideas, including the music, started here.
Wow, that's really cool.
And it's interesting to hear the difference between the SNES and the PlayStation versions of these songs.
I will have to go investigate this.
Yeah, definitely really cool. Anything else on Radical Dreamers? Ray?
I'm in the same boat as you. I played a little bit and then got stuck and stuff.
Should I play this or jump straight to Chrono Cross?
I
cared the most about Chrono Cross, to be fair to me, the game was not obtainable at all.
Mm.
And now I know it's on PSN now.
Right. Go ahead, Ray.
I would just say, right now, it was always sort of considered as the weird thing for Chrono fans to check out. Mm. And I think that's still... is true. I mean,
it's probably better at this point to just play Cross and then go back to look at that as this stepping stone.
I think you'll appreciate it more if you play Cross first, because this game does not exist in any sort of Chrono timeline. It's sort of its own thing that was a first attempt at sort of following up on. I mean, was it ever even considered related to Chrono Trigger at the time, Ray? Radical Dreamers in any way?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
I didn't know if it was or not.
It still had some of those narrative links in it.
Hmm. Okay. So, our fourth game in our countdown is Seiken Densetsu 3. Came out in 1995 for the Super Famicom. You might know it as Secret of Mana 2, which we didn't get. And this translation was released in 2000 by a whole group of people. I don't want to say all their names because there's a lot of them. But
one of them is a guy who...
Oh, Neil Corlett.
No.
Oh,
one of them is named SOM2 Freak.
Yes.
A guy who was basically obsessed with this game from day one and decided to name his handle that.
So. Right. And like with Final Fantasy V, this was a huge landmark release because Final Fantasy V was like, look what we can do. This was basically, look what we can do when things are too hard for even a publisher itself to do. Because one of the reasons this game didn't come out here wasn't a lack of resources. It was because this game is extremely buggy and the text was super compressed with this strange algorithm that like only the people working on it at the time would know how to work around. And obviously, they probably moved on to a new project or however that works in game development.
I'm sure at that time period, it was very much like PS1 all firing on all cylinders. Everybody, all hands on deck for like FF7 or 8.
Start rendering as much crap as you can for this new game. But Ray, do you want to talk a little bit about Seiken Densetsu 3? I mean,
the problem is I'm not even that familiar with Secret of Mana.
Okay, I mean,
well, Secret of Mana itself is a sequel.
Yes.
Part 2.
You know what? I played the hell out of Final Fantasy Adventure. Dropped off after that.
Secret of Mana was it's actually a upcoming VG Empire. This episode. This is already posted and actually has
Brett Weinbach of Legacy Music Hour.
Ooh,
yeah, he's coming up to be on the show, which is pretty cool.
That's rad.
But no, it's one of my favorite games, Secret of Mana, and I have this. I still have a VHS from like 93, 94 that I recorded of myself playing all the way through it, and I got snowed in at my house over Christmas last year, and actually just can't go anywhere. Got a bottle of Jameson, and I'm going to watch this basically a 1993 version of a Let's Play of me playing Secret of Mana.
I love that.
Then loving that so much, and then reading Seiken Densetsu 3 is coming. That's going to be Secret of Mana 2. Mm-hmm. Got it. And then you wait months and months in EGM, and then all of a sudden one issue, it's like, it's not. And you're like, what?
But and it's a news blip, and you'll never comment more
about it. And then
short of writing them a letter, you'll never understand why.
And then not long after ROM showed up, I was like, wow, do they have that? And then it was one of those things like, it was this magical holy grail of actually getting to see it and play it. And But then by the time it showed up, I'm an adult in college, and I don't have time to just
60-hour RPG for you.
Yeah, and it's like, well, I just played Chrono Cross, and I'm kind of...
Yeah.
I need to play Shadow Man bad, so...
I mean, it's still a
time well spent.
It's still a good game, Secret of Mana 2. I'll just call it for the sake of not having to say a Japanese thing over and over and probably mangle it. But... it's not as good as Secret of Mana. I think this is sort of where the cracks are starting to show in this franchise. Sure. I mean, it has this weird class system where you make these really important choices in the game.
Yeah.
And you don't know if it's a good choice or a bad choice until it's way too late. You can't ever go back. And that's one thing. You kind of have to sit down with like a guide first and say, I want to take this path with this character and this path with this character. And it was sort of ambitious, and it was sort of this weird, like, the SNES or the Super Famicom is dying. Let's make these super ambitious RPGs. So we have Tales of Phantasia, Star Ocean. I'm sure they sold for like $180, the equivalent of our dollars in Japan.
I mean, that's like FF3. I remember paying $79.99.
Yeah, me too.
At a Babbage's back then.
So yeah, I mean, and also Hiroki Kikuta did the music for this one too. And a weird story, it's not even that important, but I worked at Atlas and I worked there with a guy who did a lot of convention planning. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, I got to go pick up Hiroki Kikuta. He's going to be sleeping on my couch. It's like, do you realize how important? I mean, he knew how important he was, but he's just a dude. It's like, wow.
So for the record, what's he notable for?
What's he notable for?
Yeah.
Secret of Mana soundtrack
something else.
Oh, Hiroki Kikuta?
Yes, Kikuta.
I know he eventually did music for a lot of like hentai games in an unfortunate period of his life.
I
think that's where we all know him from.
Yeah, but I can't think of anything else. I mean, was he like Koldeika also? Like he eventually
Concept or no? That's
I think it was. I think it was.
You meant to say Koldeika?
Koldeika. That sorry.
Infogrames.
I think he split off from Square to make a development house that ended up making one PlayStation game and then folding.
Okay.
And I think that was how do you say it again?
I don't know.
Koldeika?
Oh, Koldeika, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
But I mean, like I said before, this is one of the most impressive achievements of the scene because...
Yeah, so you mentioned Neil Corlett, and he's like a super hacker guy, and he just, you know, buckled down and finally figured it all out, basically. This immense compression scheme that was inside the game and, you know, buried all the text inside, you know, bytes and bytes and bytes, and then everything else on top of that, all the other data for the game. So it's just this giant project of trying to scoop all that out and get what you really need and then put it all back in somehow.
Taking apart a car and not being able to read any of the manual. Exactly. Yeah, being like, I think the engine goes here.
That's when you call your dad and he'll have to. So Neil Corlett was the dad.
Awesome. I mean, just reading the translation notes, I can see why Square USA was just like, it's like it's, so much work.
It's an immense.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like also back when it was just like, you know, Ted Woolsey doing all the editing and he having to cram things that would not get properly fixed. Like,
and a lot of it was like backwards engineer. Like, we didn't save the source code, so you have to figure out how to like hack this finished game to put the text in. I mean,
that is so irritating how often that happens.
So
that's another example going the extra miles. That not only did they scrape all that stuff out, but they also hacked it enough so that they could properly allow character limits to be expanded for English and all that. So
So if you haven't played it, it's worth trying. I would say please sit down and figure out how you're going to play the game first, like which characters you're going to use.
I don't have a lot of time in my life for like massive RPGs anymore. Yeah. For a lot of them, I try to kind of limit myself to two a year. Except I now have a 2-hour commute and I travel, and I would love to play more of these in my 3DS or PSP, but they just don't show up PSP, obviously. They're not going to get a lot of the Nintendo product.
And it's weird. Whenever RPGs are re-released, it's like Breath of Fire 2. No offense to Capcom, but it's not the strongest Breath of Fire.
Very offended.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That is the biggest gap in my Capcom knowledge.
Speaking of translations, that's pretty red. But
which one?
Breath of Fire 2.
Yeah? I keep asking about 1, but it's an ongoing saga.
Yeah.
Well, there's one in there. One on the...
Four is on PSN, and everyone's asking about 1 and 3, which is a topic I bring up a lot.
But not Dragon Quarter? That's my favorite.
Dragon Quarter comes up a little bit. Okay. But, did Setsu 3, was that...
That's the one I'm trying to destroy, actually.
Oh, yeah. What?
Dragon Quarter.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Is that the one that it was like going to be part of the PlayStation CD add-on, and then it all fell apart?
Actually, it was Secret of Mana.
Was it really?
Yeah, okay. And I think a lot of content had to be cut out because of that. And that might be why it's so buggy, too, just because it's like, oh, stop the brakes, you know, put the brakes on. Right. We got to do this Super Nintendo game. Man, but how awesome would that game have been on whatever the SNES CD?
I'm a huge Sega CD fan because it has a lot of stuff going wrong.
The one.
Well, yes, I did 2 episodes of video game music of Sega CD stuff, but it's like the idea of a Super Nintendo having the equivalent. It's like, Sega CD you can really take to the cleaners for a lot of reasons, but like Super NES, it's like that's a whole other world that I'd be like, oh my God, imagine FF3, but it has CD audio for a soundtrack and doesn't have to use the sound chip, which, while great, has a lot of the warbling notes and stuff.
The really bad electric guitar.
The graphics of FF3 with the music of Popful Mail.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and that's why I love like playing Turbo Duo and Sega CD, that juxtaposition of like playing Ease or Popful Mail or Dark Wizard or whatever, these crummy-looking games with this incredible audio.
I just like saying Popful Mail.
Who doesn't?
I am a Popful Mail myself. Thank you.
So moving on to number three, we have Police Knots. It came out in 1996 for the PlayStation. There are many versions of this game, but that's the one that got translated.
And did that inspire the name of the show?
God, you'll have to ask Jeremy. Yeah. He's not here, unfortunately. But the translation was released in August of 2009 by Slow Beef as part of the Police Knots translation project. Talk about a work of art this translation is, as far as, you know, fan translations go. It's like so much work went into this. Again, just figuring out how the text is stored. How do we put our own text in there? All of the strange, like, scientific terms that are in Japanese that we have to figure out what they mean in English. Things like that.
That's why, you know, all the 32-bit games, everything that was, you know, CD-based is been kind of like this gigantic bottleneck for a lot of these fan translations.
Right.
Because, you know, we've covered so many of the 2D games in the 16-bit days. Now we have to deal with all these other games that were coded in a variety of different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that for the majority of the 90s, Kojima was an adventure game guy. He made adventure games. And this is one of the biggest one. It's actually more of a visual novel than even Snatcher. I feel like there was a lot more action in Snatcher. This game has a really slow start.
Yeah.
And it's basically about exploring this really lovingly crafted vision of the future that Kojima has. Yeah. Like how space travel is now part of everyday life. The difference between living on, you know, a space colony and Earth, you know, the sort of weird racism between people that live in the colony, people that live on the Earth. It's really amazing.
Elysium.
It's really amazing. Unfortunately, there is some weird sexism because Kojima, I mean, you can grope every woman you meet, and it includes like jiggling boob animation and the boing sound effect.
Oh neat. And a real life swing.
Yeah. And at most, they just get mildly offended. You don't have to do this in the game, so it's an optional thing. It's just like, it feels like up until a certain point, Japanese games.
So you did this, Bob.
I did this.
This reflects poorly upon
for
you.
Research. But I feel like up until a certain point, all Japanese games had these like weird, like hidden pervy things. Like if you duck here, you can see your panties or whatever. Right. But that's just another touch of that.
Anytime the it's optional thing comes up, where I'm like, yeah, but it's also not optional to have a polite greeting.
That's true. Yeah,
it's like that's also optional. Is my only option.
Yes, but like, that's never ever going to be a bullet point on the sell sheet.
Yeah, I mean the character is a perv, and I don't want to go into much. I mean, he's like sort of like a lech in the tradition of, I think even the guy in Snatcher was like sort of like a perv, so they can, you know, excuse some sort of behavior. But this game is really cool. I haven't finished it, actually. I've gotten quite a ways into it. But like, this is a major chapter of Kojima's work that we haven't seen. And from what I hear, I'm not sure if he's ashamed of it, but from what I hear from fellow game journos, it's like, you don't ask him about this. You're not allowed to ask him about Police
really?
Knots. Yeah, and it's weird because he returned to Snatcher. He made the radio play in Japan that was sort of like a sequel to the events of Snatcher. So I don't know what his deal is with Police Knots. Maybe he's afraid of a Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon lawsuit because the main character looks like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. There's a very Danny Glover-esque character. Actually, Meryl from Metal Gear Solid makes her debut in this game. I mean, it's a different character, but it's still Meryl with the hair and the foxhound tattoo and everything like that. So, I mean, Ray, anything on Police Knots? I mean, how do you feel about it?
You're about right. I would like to really get my hands on it a bit more, because I loved Snatcher as well, and I think it's a bit of a shame that Kojima just seems to have abandoned it.
Since I did the journalism thing for 6 years, and now that I'm just like not part of it at all anymore, I'm like, you know, part of me really wants to just land that interview and just open with, "So Police Knots."
Right.
And just I got nothing to lose here.
Lock the door.
Exactly. Yeah. Escort this man out of the building. Well, that's the out of the country.
If you meet him in any situation now, you could probably ask him freely. Like, there is no record for this to be on or off.
Yeah, true. No. I still think he'd just, like, punch me.
I think you have to get through his handlers first.
I'm sure there's a gauntlet of, you must gauge your questions and we will filter them through.
Whatever. I'm sending him an invite to the Strider party. See if he shows up.
But yeah, I recommend that you play this game. It has a very slow start, just to warn you guys. I mean, Snatcher starts off with a bang.
Japanese game with a slow start.
But I mean, at least Snatcher started off with a bang. I don't know if you guys have played Snatcher before, it starts off with like a really cool action-y, like sort of compelling scene that sort of sets up a mystery you have to figure out. Police Knots is really slow. It's just like, let's really get you into this world first where you can explore, like, what is a cigarette that is different from the cigarette you probably smoke in the 90s? And like, what are they called?
Death sticks?
I forget, but like, no one smokes on Earth in the future. They have these weird, like, fake cigarettes, which are sort of like e-cigs.
Huh.
What?
Yes. But I recommend it. It's really cool. And leave it to fans.
I tried to make the noise of my e-cigarette in the machine and I nearly died.
You just inhaled a stream of nicotine.
Bahamagranate.
Okay. Nicotine. Well, see, we're not in the future yet, so it's not safe.
We'll be right back.
So our next game is not technically a fan translation, but fans in the translation scene were instrumental in getting it released, and that's Earthbound Zero, aka the first Mother game, which you might know as Earthbound. This game is unofficially called Earthbound Zero. It came out in 1989 for Nintendo. Yeah. Originally planned for release. I mean, Nintendo made a translation.
There is a translation, right?
Right. This is the translation that was released. It was not meant to ever see the public. I mean,
that's the most tragic thing about it.
Yeah, and
like,
I'm sure
almost ready to go.
I feel Nintendo has done this a lot, and these are one of the few cases that we know about. You know, basically, this happened as the translation scene was booming. Someone on a news group noticed someone was selling a prototype of Earthbound for the NES, and they're like, no, Earthbound is a Super Nintendo game, but look back at Nintendo Power, they're promoting a game called Earthbound, which was Mother 1, that never came out here. So there was a huge back and forth between the community and buyers. I'll put a link to the story. It's slightly complicated, but basically they had to raise money to dump the ROM, and after that they had to figure out how to break the copy protection. But after that, it was actually an improved version of Mother 1. They added a bunch of things, like they expanded on the ending, they fixed certain things about the menu system. They changed maps, so this is sort of like the version of Mother that is now definitive. And when they re-released it in Japan, that's the version they used, the unreleased.
So they did use that, like the version, the fan made version. I know they took inspiration from. I just assumed they like stole.
Well, there's nothing fan made,
right?
Yeah, but it does reflect what the changes made in Zero.
They clearly recognized that the American version, or the one that was intended to be American, was superior because they had the hindsight to go back
straight.
And fix things.
Look at these muscles.
None of those weird letters I can't
the
read.
The size
it.
Of my lawn. I mean.
But yeah, next to Star Fox 2, which amazingly snuck out of Nintendo and was hacked and was fixed and is completely playable as much as any kind of open world 3D game on Super Nintendo is playable. Ray, please talk about Earthbound Zero or anyone. I mean, I played through it.
Nice. And yes, anyone.
Somebody jump in here.
I had not. Earthbound was one of those games where, again, like, and as Blockbuster Video was collapsing in on itself in like the early 2000s, I remember seeing. Oh, yeah, we're just getting rid of all our Super NES games. And, oh, here's Earthbound in the box with everything in it. You know, it's not sealed because it's been rented. But I'm like, in like 2002, when I did know better. And at the same time, I'm like, man, let's go hit up some pawn shops for some rare games.
Yeah,
and I'm
like,
Earthbound.
I did that at a Kmart. Ugh. A Kmart was closing and getting rid of. If you haven't seen in my room, this happened recently to me, Mystery Science Theater, the boxes with the action figures in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Best Buy's like, these are taking up too much shelf space. This $50 to $9.99. Like, every Mystery Science box set eventually sells online for like $200, $300. One of the discs goes out of print, I'm going to buy them all.
Yeah. Right.
So that happened recently, but I did the same thing. Kmart went out of business, and it was just one rail of a shelf. And that box art for Earthbound was so unappealing and weird, even to me
as a kid.
It was
really like kiddie, you know.
And I didn't like it. And I saw it's just a row of them. It's a row of them. And I what did I do? Oh, here's three copies of Mario Paint for the same price. I'm going to get that. Because I was even thinking like a collector, I'll buy these because it has a piece of hardware in it too.
Sure, right.
I think the last time I saw it in a store, and I probably mentioned this before on Retronauts, but there was a huge stack of them at Best Buy for $2 each.
Oh, my God. Oh,
I hate myself because I could have bought all of those damn games. And
Went recently to the San Jose flea market that's a little south of here. And occasionally you can find some crazy game deals, but I was just making the rounds one day this year and saw, it's Earthbound and sitting in the sun. And it's now sun bleached, and I'm just like my knees buckle, and I'm like, what? And I walk up, and I'm like, how much? Because I'm thinking I have to save this thing from further damage, and I'm just like, how much? And he's like, $160, and I'm like, I want to powerbomb you through the table right now.
Yeah.
This is like
no jury would have convicted you.
What you're doing is like the video game version of torture.
Yeah,
this is you are devaluing a thing that people treasure.
Yeah, you're eating a dodo egg in front of me.
Yeah, it's like that level. Stop it.
As you walked away, he's like just slightly tearing the edge of the box.
Yeah,
just
you sure? As he raises the price, just to torture you.
So that drove me nuts. But thanks to it coming out on Virtual Console, which was a magical
amazing.
Event. We still don't know how it happened.
Did any of you guys dig into that at all? I'm only asking because I'm not doing press work anymore. Because somebody asked somebody at Nintendo, really the licensing the music in that game was an issue? What is she with the music?
We didn't look into it, and it's still a mystery.
We mentioned it on last time.
Because I know we've all dug into why that game might not have been released, but it's the couple of people like Game Informer or IGN asked, well, why now? I was like, I don't know.
I think this is, again, one of those things where my limited exposure having to... It's a line to walk where I do a game show, a video game music show, but have a little bit of internal knowledge as well as press knowledge. So it's a little this mixing bag of the more no one talks about it, the safer everyone is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I would not be surprised if even on the Nintendo level, they're like, what problems with the music?
Because we are still living
stop
living
talking
word,
about
like,
it.
Like Apple Music, Beatles Music may not even be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
They might not know yet.
I feel like Paul McCartney is too busy being in his 70s to care about Earthbound or to even know about
it. He's too busy finalizing his divorce with a legless lady.
I think that's been on paper for a while.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
Well, this episode recorded that far back.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yes, yes. We're back here in 2010.
Yikes. Yeah, but about the game in question, I mean... I know we got diverged, but the game is pretty much like a rougher version of Earthbound. It's like all of the ideas are there, but they're just not as polished or not as compelling. It's still very unique and interesting, but...
Oh, the character's name is Ninten?
Ninten, yes. Ninten. It's amazing. Just like Ness in Earthbound, but it's a little grindy, but the guy who is sort of a major figure in the Earthbound scene, Tomato, he released something called the Easy Patch, where it puts an item in the game called the Easy Ring. When you wear it, enemies give you more... More experience in gold, and I think it might cut down on the encounter rate. I'm not sure.
It's like a GBA Breath of Fire 1 style. Like, we have nerfed everything.
Sort of. But, I mean, I think that's the best way to play through this game, because Japanese RPGs don't age well, especially ones from the late 80s that are kind of copying Dragon Quest style action.
I mean, that's how I finally beat the NES Final Fantasy, was just Game Genie Infinite Gold. I'll do everything else.
Right.
But I'm not grinding to pay for magic for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And just sort of like Radical Dreamers and Chrono Cross, all the Earthbound songs you like are in Mother 1 in like NES chiptune format, including some ones that never made it to Mother 2 or Earthbound that are still really good. Like, the Wisdom of the World song, I think, is really good. Yeah. And they also released, this is kind of kind of related, but they released a full, like, orchestrated version of the Mother 1 soundtrack in Japan, and they gave all the songs lyrics. Some of it is kind of goofy, but it's really endearing.
The original release?
Yeah.
That's what bugs me, is that the games are that important over there. Usually those things get to have importance elsewhere.
Yeah, it's also a lot easier to do things inside Japan that never leave Japan.
Right. I mean,
it's a magical barrier that... rules?
Yeah, they got a British pop singer to do the music, and I'm sure... possibly help write it, but it, like, all the lyrics are in English, and it's really cool. You should listen to it. Here I stand before you, ready to receive me. Show me the wisdom of the world. Tell me the secrets of the heart and the sweet mystery. Yeah, Mother, it's interesting, and I definitely recommend you play it with the Easy Patch if you don't want to play a game with 1989 balanced difficulty in an RPG.
That was definitely the soundtracks. Being in Japan last year for TGS and a couple of other trips, like going through looking for game soundtracks and seeing things like that are just weird one-offs, and I'm like, I want to buy this, but... It's a relic hunter at that point. Like, the Super Metroid soundtrack, I already have all this music, but the idea that it got a release in a store, I will pay $90 for this because it's a true relic. And when I see things like this that are like, hey, here's a Mother soundtrack, or Monster Hunter music we just added dance lyrics to, and all the lyrics are about cooking. It's like, this is a magical, weird video game music world. Like,
I remember in the anime album days, they would just have image albums where it'd be like, here's a character, and here are all the songs that she wrote about herself, or like her struggles with life, or whatever.
The Immortals Mortal Kombat.
Sort of like that.
Or all the songs Knuckles sings about himself.
God.
He's representing... What? Echidonia?
Echidona!
Yeah. I bet Snoop Dogg would do a team up with Knuckles.
Echidona?
What wouldn't he do for money? That's another question for another
Snoop
show.
Snoop Lion.
So we're at the number one most important fan translation, according to me, so
in
don't get
universe.
Mad. In the universe. Take that, Rigel 7, or whatever. So, if you haven't been paying attention and you notice...
I hear they're up to Mother 6 and Rigel 7.
Oh, well.
The Rigelians really know what's
God.
Up.
They have so much anime, too. But number one is Mother 3, as if you didn't know, because why would we leave this out? 2006, Game Boy Advance, a translation came out in 08 by the Mother 3 translation team, mostly led by a guy named Tomato, who is, like, the mother guy on the internet. He's the greatest guy. He translates so much stuff. I think he translates anime professionally or maybe games professionally now, but this is, like, the mega ultra best fan translation to end them all, mostly because everyone on that loves Earthbound is crazy, like me. I love Earthbound.
Yeah.
But I feel like Mother 3 was the game we got dicked around with most as far as Earthbound fans, because it was like, okay, it's going to come out for the N64 disc drive. Mm-hmm. Nope, sorry, we screwed that up. Okay, now it's coming out for Game Boy Advance. Oops, sorry, we can't put that out because the DS is out. We can't put that out. We can't put Rhythm Heaven out. But now the fans, I think there was a weird period where they were sort of waiting for word from Nintendo, but obviously they weren't going to do anything, so they sort of jumped on this game. And it took a good 2 years for this translation to happen, because Tomato has translation notes online, and he does like a Legends of Localization series, which is really great. Yeah. He looks into localizations. Even Super Mario and Zelda, there's so much going on in the Japanese one that's not happening in the American one, like enemy names. And you find out that Moblin is actually a pun in Japanese and things like that. Like, he's really into translations, and he's instrumental in getting this game out. But it's hard for me to state how much care went into this. Like I said, if you go to his website, you can read translation notes, which he hasn't finished yet, but they're just so, like, they thought about every line of dialogue, they thought about every character, like, and, like, every voice in the game. And the game sort of shipped with a strategy guide, just like Earthbound, and I'll pass this around. It's wow. the official fan gamer guide. It is so great. Like, every enemy has an illustration. Some of the characters have clay models.
The clay models, yeah.
I'll just pass this around to you guys. This were offering through Fangamer. And sort of like, and then the run up to the Mother 3 translation, they were like, here's some merchandise for Mother 3. Here's a keychain. Actually, I have the keychain. And that's the guide. Unfortunately, the guide didn't ship with the translation, if you want to call it that. It's fantastic. I recommend you use the guide to play through the game just for that, you know, Earthbound experience. But yeah, and Mother 3 is a really good game. It's not as, it didn't touch me as much as Earthbound did. It didn't get, maybe because I'm too old to be like, or too jaded to still feel those things.
The 20s happened.
Exactly. But I still think it's a really excellent RPG, and I do want to do a mini episode about it soon. But above all else, if you want to play a translation, this is the one to do. It's like, I think they went above and beyond even what a publisher could do, because they have the freedom and time to, let's make a guide. Let's spend as much time as we can to make everything in this game perfect possible.
Nobody sent a C&D to this thing?
No, I mean, I think in order to... to do that, Nintendo would have to address Earthbound. I mean, they're doing it now, but I think they'd even want to go that far, because they recognize the legal problems with the game, and they kind of wanted to, you know, keep their distance. At least in America. In Japan, it's like, hey, it's the anniversary of Mother. We're going to re-release this stuff. But in America, it's much different. Thankfully...
Does that mean there's an official translation floating around somewhere?
For Mother 3, I really doubt it, because I think Nintendo was like, those were late GBA games, and I think they were like, we don't want to put effort into these if no one's going to buy them. Like, Rhythm Heaven, I still feel the best version of that game was the original GBA game, and that never came out here. It was an 06 GBA game as well, so... Yeah, that's Mother 3. Right? I mean, has anyone played this, or do they care?
No.
I care so much about this game.
What's the word I'm looking for? Our mutual friend, Mike Grimm, I think he has played, if not played through it, he's definitely played it.
Okay.
Because he's the similar boat where he's a huge, huge Mother Earthbound fan. He was on that VG Empire episode that we did about the series, and he ran the episode because I'm like, dude, this is your hour.
And he's like 7 feet tall and has a great NES outfit.
He does have a good NES outfit.
And I have to say, like, we're talking a lot about RPGs, and I didn't want to make this RPG heavy because, like, first of all, it's hard for any of us to play an RPG these days. This game is maybe 25 hours at most if you want to do everything. It's a very breezy RPG. It's still difficult. The battle system is amazing. It has this weird, like, implicit rhythm battle system where you tap the button along to the beat in the combat.
Oh, cool.
And when it's your turn, you, like, go up for your move, and you sort of tap as the music picks up, and then it will do, like, a combo. It's not necessary to know that to play the game, but if you do know it, you can do some amazing things with the battle system, which is what I like. And every character has their own instrument that plays along with the music. It's a very musical based system, which it's so weird. I have never seen anything like that, and I don't know if I ever will again. It just was just a way to rethink, like, what can we have the player do during this weird turn based system.
Did you ever have an episode that was just devoted to RPG battle systems?
That would be amazing, actually. I might steal that.
I know there was Active Time Babel, which I don't know if they did that. But like, thinking like, obviously Grandia 2 comes to mind, or Mario RPG, the whole Paper Mario series, or the whole Mario and Luigi, like, hey, it's turn-based, but we've got all this meta stuff for you to think about. And even Artanelico had a lot of cool stuff going on.
Eternal Sonata?
Yeah, Eternal Sonata had a similar bit. But yeah, Artanilico had this cool like back and forth on this meter. You're trying to build songs. It was really cool.
Like Mario RPG had timed hits, but this one, music was so instrumental to the game and the battle system where the bosses... they would have more complex music, so the combos would be harder to do.
Oh, that's really
and some bosses would take a song that you know and suddenly change the time signature.
Mess it up.
Or, like, slow it down, you know, just, like, keep you on your toes. So I really appreciate
that. That's
a
terminology I can take back to my show.
I know probably as much as you as far as
it's,
music
it's
terminology.
It's a horrible curse to love game music this much. You're like, the rhythm of this song is...
as far as I know, time signature is a term that is real.
Okay.
I've heard that before.
I know they can be similar to other time signatures.
What's that?
Or maybe melodies.
I think that's...
Am I doing okay
you might have made
here?
That up.
Am I doing okay?
You might have made that term up.
Melodies?
Yeah.
It exists.
That's a girl's name.
No, rhythm is a dancer. I know that.
Serious is cancer.
I know groove is in the heart, and et cetera.
Right.
So yeah, that was our fan translation episode. Woo. Thank you for joining us, Brett and Chris.
I just wanted to encourage people, because this is, I'm slowly realizing, like, there's a lot of fan outcry for games like Mother 3 and Mother 1. Earthbound just came out on the Wii U, and if you have a Wii U and you care about the future of the Earthbound series, it really is important to vote with your dollar.
I agree.
Because I'm realizing now that there are a ton of fans. I work on a fan site. There are a ton of fans for things that don't have sales figures next to them. And I realize how many games I played without paying for. That's just what it looks like to somebody, a gatekeeper who doesn't have the same love for the series that you do, that this made
it's,
so low numbers.
It's a hard
shitty,
message.
It sucks.
It's a hard message to balance, too, because it can be misinterpreted as you're holding a game hostage.
Yes.
When
right,
it's like,
right.
No.
But the way it looks to somebody up top is like, this sold like crap. But there we have hundreds of thousands of people who claim to have played it.
Right.
How did you play it?
That's true. I do want to say that if there's a way for you to buy these games or give money to the companies...
Yeah, that's the lesson of all of this.
Yeah.
I'll never play anything you want to play, period.
Right. Like, with something like Sweet Home, I mean, like, if you buy a used copy, that money's going to go to the seller.
Yeah.
No one from Capcom will ever see it.
Anything older than that is like... But then it also becomes a challenge. Like, I'm very much a fan of, like, I want every game... any publishers ever made, why wouldn't you put it out on a digital platform?
Exactly, I'm the way
but
too.
There still is work. There's even when it looks like a simple copy paste, there's all kinds of behind the scenes, first party stuff. There's all kinds of reasons why it's harder.
Right.
But there are people in every company fighting to do just that. Yes. So even though it may take years and years, you did get Earthbound.
Yeah,
you got Earthbound.
And an example, the Game Boy Mega Man games are coming out.
Right.
Including Mega Man 5/V, the really cool, like, off the wall one. That's a great, like, to me, holy grail that now hopefully new people will be able to play. So it takes a while, but people are opening their eyes to it.
I feel like with Earthbound now out, anything is possible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like,
and DuckTales being remade.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not just plugging here. Like, those are things our entire time in this industry we thought would never, ever happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just resigned and never happened.
And they did.
Sure.
Until they did.
So before I wrap up, I just have a closing question maybe you guys aren't prepared for, but I'll go first. What games do you still want to see get a fan translation treatment? Maybe a game that you are dying to play, but no, the language barrier is just too much. And it will never be released here. I'll go first. I want to see Moon Remix RPG Adventure for the PlayStation. It's a super obscure, I guess, for us RPG. I don't know a lot about it, but everything I've read about it, it's like a drastic rethinking of what the RPG hero is and that you sort of play an asshole. Is that true, Ray?
Yes, it's very much a satire in parts, too. It's just you play as this kid who gets sucked into an RPG world. And at first, you're like invisible and like nobody can really see you.
Yeah.
So you get fitted out with like these clothes and you sort of look like a frumpy elf for the rest of the game. And like the crux of it is that the hero of the game world, the knight hero, he has gone rogue basically and started fucking things up all over. So you have to go and basically like repair things and meet all the NPCs and basically bring... I'm going
to
sound
bring
insane.
Peace to, go ahead.
Bring love back to the world.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, that's so
I
sweet.
Feel like the theme of the game is love. It's like love for NPCs
and
animals.
It's also developed by Love Delic.
Love Delic. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, thank you for explaining it, Ray, because I don't know that much about it. But just everything I know, I hear, just like, I got to play this game. It sounds like so cool.
Amazing, crazy, diverse soundtrack as well.
Yeah.
Because it has a whole like soundtrack system in that you find these moon discs. It's like mini discs sort of things. So you can customize your soundtrack that way.
Sweet.
And the release soundtrack for the game is like 3 or 4 discs, and it's just insane.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Ray. What would you like to see translated that hasn't done yet? I can say I know that there's a translation underway for Moon. It's probably a few years off based on how complex the game is.
Well, from that, I would say anything else from Love Delic, including UFO, A Day in the Life, What else? Not the same developers, but the guy, some of the guys responsible later made a DS game called Sakura Note, Sakura Notebook. Mm. It's sort of, it was like the spiritual successor to Contact.
Oh, yeah, we did get Contact. Yeah.
And a lot of the same people.
I reviewed that.
Yeah, a lot of the same people involved in that. So, things like that, and Giftpia, what is it? Amnesia for PS2. These are all the same people, basically, the same crew.
So, the Love Delic?
Yeah. Love Delic and...
Leak.
important distinction.
What the hell else? They split off into like three groups. Love Delic and Skip... And I'm drawing a blank on the third one, sorry, but yeah, just that crew, is all their games are great. As for me, you know, I have my crown jewel, my summer vacation series.
Right, yeah. I can't believe I didn't immediately think of that when I asked you.
but the problem is that all the text in those games is set vertically, and, you know,
yeah.
It's quite a challenge, I think, to try and rejigger that. For
just move the TV on the
Tate mode, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. But then you miss so much else. And,
yeah.
And then related to that, there's another Super Nintendo adventure game by Nintendo called Hajimari no Mori, or The Forest of Beginning. And that sort of has the same themes as My Summer Vacation, but it has more mysticism in it. You're just like a boy who goes out into the country for the summer, and you walk around, and it's this very, very small village that you... walk around, you meet this, I guess, like, magical girl. Not Sailor Moon type magical girl, but you're just, like, exploring the forest with her and solving puzzles and things like that.
I'm trying to think.
So those are big. And those are things that I think of. And I wish also that the translation for Sega Gaga would be finished.
Oh, yeah.
I love that soundtrack.
They make strides every blue moon. So,
Greg, we were just talking about My Summer Vacation series.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was Attack of the... Friday Monsters,
right? Yeah,
the
yeah.
conversation.
Yeah.
But then that game exists.
That's true, and that
and
was great because I was like, "Oh,
reviewed
thank
very
God.
Well, and it sold for a fair price." I have to imagine people are taking a look at it.
Yeah,
I'm very hopeful for
the difference being My Summer Vacation is a Sony property.
Oh, right.
And although it's the same developer,
well, if only they had a digital platform.
I know,
rats.
We won't. Maybe they'll translate the PSV to TV.
Yeah, but yes, I invite you, Chris, to read my magazine all about them.
Yes,
it just came out.
So. Ooh, which. Can I find it on newsstands?
Scroll, no.
No. Oh, no.
Just my...
I don't have an iPad.
No. You can get in print.
Oh, really?
It's the magic thing.
I have it. It's true. So, Brad and Chris, what games would you like to see? Game or games? I'm sure there's something out there.
When I have to think about my favorite game on the DS, it's probably Retro Game Challenge.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah,
my other wheelhouse.
Yeah. You just stumbled into Ray's other
wheelhouse. Yeah, and there's a sequel. I had only seen it very briefly. I definitely know it needs... I can't really ever play it without a translation. But I don't know if they can put the same kind of love into it that they did Retro Game
Challenge.
Yeah,
that was a real labor of love.
All right, here's a story on that.
Tell me.
There was a group getting...
Oh, and Ace Attorney Investigations, too. But go ahead.
not a group, but there was a guy getting ready to hack it and do all that. And so I joined up as an editor. I said I would edit this, whoever else translated it. A lot of big delays. This is the thing about fan translations, that some of them do not really... get finished because someone realizes it's more work than they think, or they just have other obligations, like school, for example. That's kind of what happened here, and so it sort of, you know, dipped under the radar for a few years. So now another guy came in, and just recently, like in the past week, he started to hack more of that sequel and say, you know, okay, I'm figuring this out. And so the original hacker guy is like, okay, well, if I get... I might help out on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone else involved in the translation and the editing say, okay, yeah, we might do that. So there's hope yet
really?
For Retro Game Challenge 2.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, you're involved with it.
A little bit, yeah. I'd like to
I guess I can bother you.
I know.
What's that
open
like?
The door. I can bother you about it. I can't wait. I'm so happy now. I really did love that game.
Yeah.
Like, third, and I had never... I don't even...
And the sequel's way, way better.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
And the third one looks a little... but
it's a reverse our roles.
Where does the third one go? Does it head into
the
third
one? It's sort of a reboot because it's a different developer. It's going to be on 3DS, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
But the second one was like, let's talk Super Nintendo now.
And yeah.
That's the one. I was really excited to see that. And it just that all those games were fun.
Yes.
The real game itself was fun. I really love retro game challenge. Pick it up if you see it.
Yeah, definitely. Brett, do you have anything in mind for?
I've been trying to pick my brain, and between what you guys said, and
we
then
got all the good ones.
Between what you said, and then thinking about like, well, what did I always want? And even things like, remember, Sin and Punishment came over.
That's right. True? Yeah,
and like,
yeah,
like all these weird little things that I always wanted. Like, well, it'd be nice to finally get this, that, whatever. And it's like all of them eventually came. Like FF2 and 3 were the things I really wanted for a long time. They came over in various forms. Yeah. FF5 came over in various forms. And most of them weren't even like, I didn't have to go the fan hack route or the fan translation route. It just ended up happening. So yeah, I'm kind of struggling. Like, I'm really trying to think of something like, is there a licensed property like Transformers that had a game in Japan that I never got to
is
play?
Is there a Godzilla game?
Yes.
See, there's
Super Earnest RPG.
Super Earnest. Well,
that'd be great. I would play that.
Man, I don't even. Man.
Huge in Japan.
Yeah. Huge in like Norway or something.
France, let's be honest.
I'm really struggling. Like, even Godzilla, I was like, well, we got Godzilla 1 and 2 on NES, and then there's like Godzilla Generations game that wasn't very good. So
destroy all monsters.
I feel like I kind of got the things I had in my mind are sated.
Okay.
Strangely enough. Mm, and cool. Then what you guys had offered up as well.
Well, Brett is satisfied for the time being. But
for the moment.
For the moment, right. So let's wrap up really quick. You can find us on all kinds of stuff. If you just look up Retronauts, we're on Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitch.tv. Mm-hmm. And please go to Retronauts.com, especially after you listen to this episode, because we're going to have links where you can find all these translations, more information about things we talked about, and all kinds of other good stuff. So please go to Retronauts.com, and please keep the reviews coming on iTunes. They help us a lot. Every review we get helps us reach more people, helps more people see the show. I definitely recommend that you guys do that if you like us and want us to stay around. So, contact info, I am StosselFan420 on Twitter. I've been saving that up for the whole show. No, I'm Bob Servo, you know me, and I'm sorry if I made you mad.
I saw you for talking shit on John
a little
Stossel.
Bit. I figured he was an easy target, but some people took it personally.
He is.
But
he's such an easy target. Yeah. My favorite clip in the universe is him getting beat up by a wrestler on camera.
I was just made aware of that, but I don't want to get into any more hot water. So
yeah, direct all your hatred at me. No, yes. John Stossel's an idiot.
Yes. Chris will absorb more hatred than me.
Yes.
Ray, where can we find you?
I'm on Twitter, RDBAAA. As mentioned very briefly, I have my magazine scroll.vg. And I guess now you can find me playing World of Tanks, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm interested in World of Airplanes. Warplanes.
Warplanes.
I'm an aviation dork ass.
So, Chris.
Oh, yes.
Are you? Where can we find your stuff?
You can go to lasertimepodcast.com and find all of our shows, including Laser Time, recent topics. I think we did best British exports. We all brought upon by World's End, which I still haven't seen. We just did a show about nice people cursing.
I love the George W. Bush.
George W.
Right.
Bush.
Bush.
I love Kennedy.
Well, oh, that's good too.
It's
yeah.
just a fact. Yep.
these episodes will be months ago, but please look them up. I'm
they
sure
they will
you,
be.
You
we're going to have a show coming up about cheesy game music.
Oh, cool.
Specifically, yep. music about games, not just crappy okay, game music, right. as in yeah. sung by a human being who should know better.
Yeah.
And. I'm trying to think. We had another fun topic.
Our two big ones lately have been the shame songs. It's sort of a renaissance.
Those are
the,
great. Yeah, I love those episodes.
We do a show every once in a while where we everything you're embarrassed about on your playlist, we just play out loud and say why and why you felt that way. Why you felt that way 20 years ago. And then we had people share theirs, and theirs were even more embarrassing. So haha. And we played them live.
But it's more like the idea of like there's no such thing as a shame song. It's like, no, if you actually enjoy it but accept all the trite nonsense about it, that's fine.
When Brett
that's
brought
totally
up the
fun.
Subject, I no longer have shame anything. Like, I like something and I just like it.
Yep.
And I'm okay with that. And I'll defend it. But then we have a cheap podcast I do every week with Henry Gilbert. He's been on the show before.
Oh, cheap podcast is a wrestling show.
Oh, it is. Cape Crisis
there you go.
Is the
but Henry's on
show.
That one. Cheap podcast as well.
He is, usually. Cheap podcast is Dave Rudden's wrestling show, which is also on our network. There's Michael Rapard's Video Game Apocalypse, and I'll let Brett plug the other one, but lasertimepodcast.com.
Yeah, Lasertime is great.
Is your key to that. Lasertime show on Facebook and Twitter. I'll shut up.
VG Empire on Twitter and .com. That's the game music podcast that's sort of part of the Lasertime umbrella.
You wish.
Yeah, we wish. But recent episodes, if this is posting in October, we are in the middle of what I like has shamefully become known as
Rocktober.
only because it rhymes. Which is, it's a bi-weekly show, but last year October, I was like, I want to turn it weekly again and do every week is Castlevania, because that's one of the franchises that's like, no one episode can contain Castlevania, so I will do four and then theme it all month. So this year, it's actually Final Fantasy.
I'm looking forward to that.
This month,
long rock block of Castlevania.
It's all Final Fantasy, but it's all, instead of going chronologically, it's like, this episode is all overworld music. This episode is all battle music.
I like
so
it. I
it's
like
kind
it.
Of jumping around a lot. But I mean, there's 50 something episodes now, 56 episodes, something like that. So now we've done Donkey Kong Country episodes. We've done the Mother series, Ninja Turtles episode.
My favorite being the Cavalcade of Sports.
Yes. Where you hear just so
best
much weird
music.
Stuff.
That the Mike Tyson's punch out music was ripped off from the Gillette.
The Cavalcade. Gillette music
blew my damn mind.
It was a new brand new day. But it's just a labor of love, and I love like game music and OC Remix and Game Chops and all the people who support game music. Video Games Live did their Kickstarter and got the Volume 3 going.
Oh, awesome.
And, I mean, it's a scene I love to death. So
cool.
And of course, if you can get to MAGFest, I've still never been, but that is the place to go if you're anywhere on the East Coast in January.
We are thinking about it. But as for us, we're going to get going here, but Brett and Chris will be back next week with a whole new episode. So thanks a lot, guys, and we'll see you then.